Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, or I can hear
Awesome.
you.
I would assume if Tracy can't, she would let me know.
Wait, what did you say? I can't hear you.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not right.
How's it going?
It's going pretty good.
Think
I
you can
have
hear?
four frogs sitting on my laptop, man.
Really?
These frogs are like the perfect size for giant frogs, man.
You
For
gotta watch
D&D.
out, man. Frogs pee everywhere, you
Yeah,
know.
but these are rubber, so
Oh, well, you know.
there won't be any peeing.
That you
But
know
yeah,
of.
it was like I had to come away with something worthwhile from Chuck E. Cheese. I mean, oh my God. So
You said you were gonna throw him in the village of Hamlet, huh?
that's right, because that's like the classic encounter. I mean, that's like
Yeah.
you can name 10 encounters. The classic one is the attack of the giant frogs at the Moat House, right there at the Village of Hamlet, man. So,
Yep.
for some of you listeners, that will be before the age of.
That's
But no, man, there's lots going on. So.
on. Well, do we want to invite someone else onto the podcast?
I am totally open tonight, either way. So,
Yeah, I have no preference.
yeah. So if you've got someone in mind, great. If not, it can just be the three of us. Don't care. So.
I don't particularly have anyone in mind. I just didn't know who was involved in the current awesome conversations on Twitter or on message boards and stuff like that, so.
Tracy, other than Chris, who was really chatting? Oh, I guess Rob Donahue, he was on, and who else was chatting today, Tracy, about that stuff?
Maybe Eldritch. I don't know how to. Reverie? I don't know how to pronounce it.
Oh, Reverie, Eldritch
Reverie,
Reverie,
yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. Tongue-tied.
Well, do we want to invite him on?
Well, he suggested that he's available if we wanted another guest. He's a guest. He said that earlier today, so.
Okay, well, do we want to pop him on?
That'd be great.
Ask
That'd be fun.
him, someone direct message him and ask him what his Skype name is. Don't
Tracy,
say
you.
it. Don't say it online because I'm
Yeah.
recording right now, but if you type it into the Skype window, I will
Wait,
friend.
we don't edit these?
No. Maybe you're not familiar with the format of the DM's roundtable. We record and then we throw it up there. It's been so long, maybe, that you're not familiar with it. Yeah.
It's wide open Copenhagen, so look out.
Oh, I better be careful. Don't
Huh.
want
Ah.
to get into any trouble.
You? That would never happen.
Never. I'm very, very good girl, and I don't never say anything controversial.
Hold on, wait. Let me go get my boots. It's getting pretty thick in here.
Oh, and tell Thaddeus to get his ass over here too. Because I just saw him pop up on Twitter.
Did he?
Yes.
He's probably at work.
I got the impression he wanted to podcast tonight, so he better not be at work.
I think in general he works on Tuesdays, so he has a pretty demanding schedule, actually.
Yeah. You know, Sam, I'm pretty much tired of weak ass excuses, so you know. Yeah,
Whatever, you know.
I know. It's like stop standing up for him.
Did you see what he wrote on Twitter?
Oh, that because the dog was easily bored and
Yeah.
fell asleep, yeah.
He said
That's
I'm
not just the dog.
Yeah. I know. I did blame my snores on her a couple times, yeah. Only when he was talking, you know.
Oh, he says, oh, Thad says, I call not it on picking the guests for tonight's DM roundtable.
Perhaps I should add him to the call.
That would be a good idea, probably.
We can tell him we picked not him. let me find him here. He's not online. Tweet him to get his ass on Skype.
I'm on it.
Oh no, we swore.
Wait, we don't edit this? Did you,
Yeah, I said, dude, get your ass on Skype.
No, I was going to ask if we got Eldritch Reverie's Skype name.
Not yet.
Okay.
I'm not on the...
Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, I'm not on the client, so I keep refreshing the page. We should get Owen on sometime, too. So he can... Owen Stevens, he writes for Super Genius Games.
Oh, I guess I
don't... He does a bunch of Pathfinder stuff and other stuff, too.
Oh, okay. That would be someone new I wouldn't have met. I don't know who that is, so cool.
I don't know. Actually, I might be wrong on this title, but that's... Yeah.
He's done a lot of stuff, actually.
Yeah.
Paizo's like that other company, right?
You're talking about Owen K.C. Stevens, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's written a ton of stuff.
I know.
Google him, Randall, and you'll find that he's written so much stuff you'll not believe it.
Okay. Yeah. But for that other company, right?
No, for all sorts of... Yeah,
no, I'm
you
kidding,
keep,
I'm
you
kidding,
keep trying,
I'm
you're
joking.
Baiting us, and it's not working.
Damn it.
Hey, listen, I've already gotten enough... right now.
He wrote a guide to advanced game mastering for the D20 system.
Yeah. He's
oh,
awesome.
Okay.
Yeah,
I am actually aware of that book.
Yeah.
I know
you,
that
you
book.
Know
so,
him,
okay.
Yeah. That's why
All
I
right.
knew I could think All of right. something that you would recognize that he's written some really popular stuff.
Yeah, okay. I didn't mean to make it sound like that was all he did, but that's the one like that I'm most known for right now.
That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's pretty awesome.
I did not get a response from Thad yet. Let me look at my email and make sure. Well, sometimes if he'll send directs.
Right. He might just think that we're not starting till 9:30 or something. Because he's lame like that.
He's probably getting a drink. Totally calling you out on right here on the podcast, Dad.
Well, until we get responses from these guys, let's talk about RPGs.
Let's do it.
So, Tracy's really happy. Tracy, what do you want to talk about with RPGs?
I listen. Any topic I pick right now, I'm gonna get. I don't feel comfortable. You guys pick a topic, and I'll try to give conversation.
You don't feel comfortable talking?
No, it's been a hard week. It's been okay.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked a little bit about the new player stuff today, but I'd rather wait to see if some of the other people come on for that, because I think it's a really interesting discussion.
It is, and it was, I think, yeah.
I did.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh no, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to add that, and I thought it was a good discussion. In the fact that people didn't get all edition-y about it, and you know, it was really edition-y. I just pulled that word out of my ass. But anyway, but yeah, it was a good discussion because it was really. I said before I went to lunch, I said it was like, you know, a bunch of genius just exploded on Twitter. And it really did, because there's all these great ideas suddenly shooting out of like 1,000 miles an hour. And it was like, wow, cool. You know, it's like, crap, I can't write this crap down fast enough to get it into my own game, let alone, you know. So it was one of those kind of discussions. And so
yeah.
Just filled up the feed, and it was pretty cool. So
I really loved when Game Fiends, I think it was his recommendation about the colored dice.
You know, that was a good idea. For new players, I think that's an excellent idea.
What was that? Clouds. Have a different a different color for each die? Is that what the suggestion was?
Yeah, so that way, you know, if you need the D12 and it's orange, you can just say the orange dice is the die is D12. Yeah. Roll that one.
Well, they, you know, they used to come with sets like that. In fact, I have a couple of beginning D&D sets where all the dice are different colors, the basic colors.
Right.
The old Poplow sets you could get. I mean, and we're talking back from like 1981. Used to be like that. Those were like the Cadillac of dice back then, and it was each one was a different color, so it was easy to recognize. You know which one you had to pick up. So
yeah,
and I think there was a box set that was like that, a D&D set. Or a D&D dice set that you could get that was multicolored like that. But don't quote me on that one. I don't know for sure.
I don't know if there was an individual. I don't think they ever sold, like, I take that back. I don't know if they ever sold individual dice other than, like, the premium dice that are on sale for 3rd edition and then 4th edition. Not counting those, because those are all the same color.
Right.
I don't know if they ever sold a separate set that was different colors. It could be. I don't remember ever seeing one. But I do have, like, the first... I have a first quest set from way back in 2nd edition, and then there's another set that I have, and in my box I have a set of dice that are all different colors, but I don't remember if that one came with it or if it was different. But yeah, so that is a good idea. For people who are just learning, you know, that's one of those sort of really simplistic things that we forget often is... You know, someone who's never used these dice before, do they even really know what the dice look like? Or, you know, if they, you know, what are the probabilities? Like, who knows the probabilities of, you know, rolling a particular number on a 12-sided die? You know, just like off the cuff, what's the distribution of if you roll it 12 right. times, you know, what are you going to get and stuff like that? People don't generally know that.
Right.
Right.
No, you're right, and I've actually had players at my table. I've got one group that is almost all noobs. All but one player is totally. I mean, they're like have less than a year experience each, and occasionally she will pick up a dice that's not the right. It's like you're rolling a D12 for that. It's like you're gonna want to roll a higher. You're gonna roll the 20 on this one. Trust me.
Yeah.
So. You know, and it's just one of those things. But if you in instructions, and if you think about published material that you know that other people are going to read, if you can write, roll the red die or roll the blue die or whatever, that is so much simpler than you know find the 20-sided dice. Yes, it's the one that's got 20 sides. You know?
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. You know. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I know. I mean, I remember when I started playing. It was like always a moment of like cursing at myself when I accidentally picked up the wrong dice because I felt like I was holding up the game and I was letting everyone down and they're going to make fun of me. Even though I knew they weren't going to, I still thought that, you know. And I know I've seen it at con games when I run the learn to plays, you know, people cursing at themselves for rolling the wrong die. I'm like, it's not a big deal. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, in fact, let's just establish that for the podcast right now. Like, look, because Tracy, that sounds like a lot of weight on your shoulders. I mean, seriously. So it's like, guys out there, anyone, if you're a noob or if you're playing with noobs, if they pick up the wrong dice, no freaking big deal. Okay? It's going to happen. Even experienced DMs do it. I can tell you that myself. It's like, oh, crap, I meant to get D8s. So, you know, that it happens. Let's just let that one slide. And if you're listening to this podcast, let it go. Okay, there you go.
All right. Well, yeah, and it's what's really funny is that, you know, D12 and under, I mean, a lot of times you're not going to mix it up too badly. And even if you do, you're talking about, I mean, usually it's a damage roll. Mm-hmm. And you're talking about, on average, 1 or 2 points of damage here and there.
D10s and D8s, I have a tendency to mix up every now and then.
Right, and so that's an average of maybe 1 extra point or 1 less overall, I believe.
Times the number of dice you're rolling, but yes.
But yeah. I mean, you're not rolling 6 of them.
Yeah, that's true. I love. Well, you might be.
You could. No, just...
Probably not if you're a beginner.
But you probably don't. Yeah.
Well, maybe not. Yeah. You're probably not playing an assassin that's dropping shrouds all the time.
So. Yeah.
Yeah. I love that assassin shroud thing too.
Oh man. Mm-hmm. You drop all four shrouds on somebody, and you get the feat brutal shrouds. So it's like you're rolling one, you roll it once, like, oh, brutal shroud, roll that one again, click, you know, it's awesome. Oh, yeah.
I brought that to basically a one shot, and I thought I was kind of mad because I wanted it to be like this big reveal because it's just like that. And so I said, oh, I'm going to put a shroud on it. And the DM's, what's a shroud? And I was like, oh, you don't have to worry about it. He's like, no, I need to know what it is right now. And I was like, fine. You know, because, like, you know, having that moment where, you know, I'm like, I put the shroud on him.
Right.
And then being able to have that theatrical moment at the table where maybe the other players don't know. Mm-hmm. And I just pull them in and do all the extra damage. That's just fun to me. And it just got... I mean, it's not his fault. I can understand his point, but it just got ruined a little bit.
Yeah, it was... I did 40... I tweeted... Yeah, let me tell you about my character. No, I... last week, or last time we played, I dropped... I'm second level and hit someone for 42 points of damage using the shrouds. And it was like, wow. I didn't think that could happen. And so it was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. We can do that some more. The DM's going, oh god, why did I let you play an assassin?
Yeah.
So.
I just love assassins. Yeah. I don't know, it's funny, because I go from the, you know, a lot of my adventures and my stories are light and fluffy and unicorns, and then other parts of this, like, I want to play an assassin.
Yeah. Two sides. Now, an assassin.
A unicorn awesome. Assassin.
Yeah, unicorn that's right. Assassin. Awesome. Oh, someone's going to roll up that character.
Yeah,
someone
no
listening
kidding.
To this podcast right now is digging out the books and saying, how can I make myself a unicorn assassin?
That would be awesome. So I did read an adventure path from Pathfinder, mm-hmm. Paizo. I really liked it, but it was weird as I was reading it. I mean, you'd have to convert monsters and stuff like that, but so much of it, I was like, I could do this in 4E. This is going to be awesome.
Is it the, which one is it?
I did, that's, what was it? Serpent Skull Souls for Smuggler's Ship. It's the first one in that particular path. And you're basically... deserted on an island, shipwreck, and you have to survive and stuff like that. And that's not given too much away. They tell you that in the players.
In the intro.
Yeah,
Tracy's
good.
Giving
okay,
spoilers.
Yeah. Spoiler alert. Yeah. Sorry.
Okay. Well, I have added a new conversation person. This is Eldritch Reverie. Hello. No? Hello? Can anybody hear
Hello.
Me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Sam, so, yeah. Text once if you can hear us.
Yeah.
Yeah, not you, Sam. No,
no, no I know.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, he said his mic must be off. He's fixing it now.
Sweet.
In other words, he was probably going, hi, everybody. Yeah, hello, hello.
Yeah, I've done that 100 times. Yeah.
But it was really... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I said it was really well written. And on top of it, so they give you the adventure, and then they give you optional or additional rules to use with it. And then some fiction, too. So that was awesome.
Awesome.
Testing.
Hello.
I can hear you.
Can hear you.
Turn your gain up just a little bit.
All right, one sec. I've got a new puppy and he likes to unplug things.
Ah.
How are you guys tonight and gals?
Good.
Good. Excellent. Well, welcome. Welcome to the
I'm
show.
Jonathan, by the way.
Hi, Jonathan.
Hey, Jonathan.
Nice to meet you guys for real.
For reals, yo.
Yeah, oh, God.
Although I'll confess, I've met Tracy before. We met at actually played one of her games at D&D XP.
Oh, did she kill your character?
No, she did not.
Oh,
she
man, you're supposed to totally go with it and be like, yeah, she was such a hard DM. My character died in the first 20 minutes.
Worst DM ever.
Yeah. And then she laughed and did a little dance. It was horrible.
No, she was really good. Just a second, I'm getting my game level here. Sam, is that a game within Skype or within Windows? Or my OS, I should say.
Actually, you sound a lot clearer now. When you first came on, I couldn't barely hear you. So, okay. I don't know.
So you think we're good?
I think we're good. Everybody else hear him?
Yeah. I think so.
Awesome.
Who are we missing?
So Thaddeus hasn't popped on yet either. So I don't know if he's probably at work. So I
drinking.
Won't. Yeah. I won't
I'm
worry.
Sorry. I won't. Like that. He's probably at work drinking.
He probably is at work drinking, but that's another story.
What a job.
Disclaimer. That was a joke. Anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, I thought that might be necessary. So we brought you on because apparently you were part of a pretty interesting conversation this morning on Twitter.
I plead the fifth.
Oh, really? Okay, well.
Too late. You're on the roundtable, my friend.
See you later. No, we're going to hang up now, okay?
Twitter doesn't lie.
Yeah, I was part of the conversation yesterday. Not as much today. I got a little busy at work, but I was reading everything today that kind of came over from yesterday and what Chris Sims kind of started with the good question he had today.
Well, do you want to give the audience some context in case, like me, they were dealing with other stuff and didn't get a chance to really keep track of the whole conversation?
For sure. Something on my mind yesterday was, we refer to it as analysis paralysis, and that was the beginning of the conversation. It kind of evolved or devolved, depending on how you look at it, into something else. But we started off talking about what are some of the possible causes of analysis paralysis within role-playing games, and specifically in D&D. And Tracy and I and a couple other people talked about what would cause a player to do that in light of miniatures. And we said, you know, I think I posed the question, are miniatures really necessary within a game? Do they help the game? Do they hinder the game? You know, what are your opinion on those? And from that, we kind of evolved into a conversation about how much complexity, or Tracy doesn't like that word, so I'm not going to use it too much.
Oh, no, I'm fine with it.
Oh, okay. Here we go. Strap in, ladies.
You know, Tracy doesn't like dungeons either, so we'll just ignore that for the
moment. That's true.
Wanted to make sure people know that I did not say that any game, including 4E or Pathfinder, had too much complexity as like a general thing. I feel sometimes maybe for newbies, it's a little too hard at first, you know, to really get into. But that's the only reason that sometimes I don't like the term, because mm-hmm. I like it, but people interpret things from it.
Well, what we kind of the meat of our conversation was how much complexity is necessary in supplements for role-playing games. We were specifically talking about Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder, but I don't think we limited it to anything. But do we need both complexity and kind of a new player type atmosphere in every supplement that's put out for our game? Do we need to divide the game where we've got kind of like the old basic?
Oh, that's the part of the conversation I actually jumped in on for about 5 minutes, right? I didn't realize it was the same conversation, and then it must have evolved and spurred it off again after I was gone. Oh, crap.
And we've lost Jonathan.
Yeah.
Maybe the puppy unplugged something again.
Probably.
No.
Is Tracy still there?
I'm here.
It's because I cut him off. He's like, oh, they're
like,
fine.
He's like, screw this, I'm done.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the
there he is.
Oh, there he is.
Oh, jeez. Did I lag off, guys?
Yep, you sure did.
Ah, crap. How far did I get?
Whole group wiped.
We wiped for a second, and then I actually had cut you off and was talking, but I think we picked up everything that you had said. until I was talking. So if you picked it back up after I was done talking and thought you were being recorded, you were not being recorded.
Okay. did everything come across okay? Did you get an idea of what we talked about in the big conversation on Twitter?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it sounds like there's a couple of issues, and the couple of issues are actually what is the definition of complexity, and it's not so much an issue whether it's okay to be complex when you're sort of at the advanced stages of the game, but it's the issue of, are you too complex for a new person to be able to sort of jump in at any point? And so then the question is, well, do you need to separate it into a basic set and a more sort of advanced line of products? And does it need to be separated? Does it need to be two products? Does it need to be like, here's a starter kit to show you how this sort of thing works? And then, you know, like the old basic D&D was technically a different game from advanced D&D, but you could learn basic and then you could either stay with it through 36 levels or you could jump over to AD&D and play it and get everything else. So that's where I jumped in the conversation, and then I quickly jumped out because I was only online for like 5 minutes. But I guess Chris Sims then brought it up again this morning. Is that what happened?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a...
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. Oh, I was just going to say he'd thrown out there that it's like, look, if you were going to take something out of D&D or Pathfinder to make it more accessible to new players, what would it be? And of course, he got flooded with a whole list of all kinds of different things. And
really,
it was,
I'm actually curious what the list was.
Well, I mean, well, for example, the couple I threw out there was like, you know, let's get rid of opportunity attacks. Let's get rid of, what else did I say? I can't remember. Maybe it was immediate actions. I can't remember what it was.
I think it was immediate actions.
Yeah, it may have been. So, and those were just two. And mine were pretty lame. Other people had a much more interesting suggestion. It's not all. Someone suggested actually getting rid of hit points. And it was like, you know.
Really?
But, yeah, actually, wow. Yeah. But not. I mean, but again, the conversation was really good. It wasn't a negative conversation at all. But yeah, there was some interesting things thrown out there, and then it went kind of into a whole, you know, do we get rid of skills or feats, and maybe, you know, all skills are very general, and it kind of you know, went in a lot of different directions, but it kind of focused on skill use and stuff instead of just talking about things to take out to make the game accessible. And I think they're really kind of two different topics, but yeah, that's what kind of, you know, and Chris just ran with it from there. So, yeah.
Well, I mean, part of it with the skills was you could still keep in some ways the current, like, let's say 4E skill system, mm-hmm. but the way you could put it on your character sheet, I mean, one way would be just to rewrite skills altogether. Another way would be just to change how it is put on a beginner's character sheet, like, you know, athletics. If you're trained athletic, that means that you automatically are able to jump X squares, mm-hmm. whatever X is, and stuff like that. So it's more, in my opinion, if a person who's new looks at a character sheet and they see athletics plus 4, what is that, or plus 9, what does that really mean?
Right.
You know, it's mm-hmm. harder to understand that. Where, like, if you say, oh, I can jump 15 feet horizontally, well, then I can start playing with stuff. Like, that's more concrete to me.
Just as an interesting aside, before we get too far into this, I don't know if you guys keep up with Pathfinder news or information that much, but I've started to keep up with it a bit recently because I'm getting interested in the game. There was a Pathfinder announcement, I'm not sure when it was, for a new basic set coming out this mm-hmm. fall or into the summer. And one of the hot topics has been that right now no one has a real good idea of what they're going to be trimming from the Pathfinder rules, if anything, for this box set. So it's been a pretty – there's a lot of discussions online about this. You know, what are they going to do to Pathfinder to put it into a basic form for new players? So Chris asking that, not only about D&D and Pathfinder, I found that kind of interesting. So,
you know what's really funny? Let me give you sort of a – based on what you guys just said, a sort of historical look at this, because I'm actually running a play-by-post basic D&D game right now. or it's actually just starting, but I've been doing all my prep and everything. And what's really funny and what's striking me about everything that you guys just said, other than the takeaway hit points thing, is all the stuff that people suggested to take away is the stuff that's not in basic D&D, like the old red box, 1983 red box.
Right.
And then it also got added back in before they killed the basic D&D line. So if you, for example, have the rules cyclopedia, which is the sort of Bible for basic Dungeons and Dragons, you get all of the classes and you get weapon mastery, which is basically amounts to feats, and you get a new skill list that you can use, which basically amounts to skill use. And you get the sort of stuff that people are talking about taking away to make it easier for new people. I just find it extremely interesting that basic D&D was meant to be sort of the intro to the hobby. Here's this really basic system to learn it, and it doesn't have any of that stuff you guys talked about. And then when they realized it was actually a viable line on its own and they decided to keep it going, you know, they had the five boxes, right? Red, blue, teal, black, and gold. And then they had the cyclopedia, and they had a slew of adventure modules for, you know, different levels of adventuring and all that. And then they eventually killed the line and folded it into AD&D second edition. But throughout the entirety of, you know, first edition, it was also a parallel line running, and it had none of that stuff until the very end, the very, you know, 3 years before it was killed. It had that stuff. It's just really interesting to me I guess I'm wondering if the reason you get those suggestions is because people sort of are thinking about it like that, and they remember it being relatively easy to learn when it didn't have that stuff, or if they really think it's necessary to take that stuff out to make it a more beginner's game.
Well, I think it has more. I think a lot, that may be a big part of it. I think another part of it would be that people are thinking about, okay, these are the things in my game that slow my game up, mm-hmm. and these are the things that I trip over as far as understanding all the ins and outs and mechanics and like, for example, if I don't have to deal with opportunity powers or powers that grant opportunity attacks, well, then that's a big chunk of the game I don't have to worry about. So boom, it's gone. You know, the same, that kind of thing. If we can simplify skills or whatever, then I don't have to worry about, like Tracy just said a couple of minutes ago, you know, I don't have to worry about what does that plus mm-hmm. 9 mean? You know, I just have to know that, you know, I rolled this dice and because I'm trained in that or whatever the example is. Mm-hmm. But I think those are the kinds of things that I think a lot of people are thinking of. I mean, you and I are older, Sam, so
yeah, it's like,
I remember the basic edition before those separate box sets. I remember.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I know, but I just wanted. Yeah. I was illustrating the point of, because the 1983, you know, Frank Mincer box was the one that mm-hmm. that went for five different boxes and whatnot.
Right.
So,
I mean,
right.
Go ahead.
It's interesting you bring up the basic D&D box, because I did have a little time this afternoon. I've got a sick wife, so I've been kind of busy tonight. But I pulled out. I've got the Tom Moldavay and Frank Mincer mm-hmm. boxes. I don't have the Eric Holmes, the original one, which I wish I did. But yeah. I pulled those out and did a little searching online, and I found a really good webpage that breaks down the difference in the evolution of those box sets
mm-hmm.
and tells, you know, this is what Eric Holmes did, and this is what Tom Moldavay changed when he brought out his box set, or his mm-hmm. rule set, mm-hmm. so on and so forth. And you see a kind of level of complexity already starting to grow mm-hmm. between what Holmes had in his box set and what Frank Mincer had in his.
Right.
But one thing I found really interesting was there was a lot of discussion today on different parts of the game that might not be clear to a new player, even to the point of dice. I can't recall who made the comment about not referring to dice by their sides, but instead referring to them by colors.
We already covered this actually before you hopped onto the call. We talked about that actually, but it's good that you bring it up again, because it just sort of shows how important of a point it was, because we were talking about the different, you know, they used to come with the dice were different primary colors. So yeah,
that's Quinn Murphy, by the way, Game Fiend.
Yeah,
was who brought that up.
Look in the Mincer box set, page 12. The Mincer rulebook. I mean, page 12 is mm-hmm. something that I saw this and immediately thought of what Quinn had said today. They've got a beautiful little page describing what dies.
Thaddeus, you're echoing back on us.
Yeah, I don't have my regular mic plugged in yet. You gotta give me a minute.
Thaddeus is broadcasting from the back of a moving van.
Yes, he is.
Can you mute Thaddeus?
Okay. Go ahead.
I'll add
him back in a few minutes. Yeah. He obviously he went away looking for his microphone, so he'll ping when he wants back on.
They have hand-drawn pictures of all of the dice, including the box set, and below each picture, it actually has the name of the dice with the acronym or representation, whatever you want to call it. So for a 20-sided, it actually says 20-sided, and then it says D20 right after it. Mm-hmm. And then they go a little further and even explain a lot of the common terminologies we use. So if you see something like 48, it'll say roll an 8-sided die 4 times. Mm-hmm. And that wasn't present in the earlier boxes, and I thought that was really interesting in light of what Quinn said today. I would just say, hey, they kind of, that was a problem back in the day, too.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. And one thing, too, about the box sets, I mean, my understanding is that the basic game, some people went on to do advanced, but a lot of people just stayed in basic. So I feel like it's kind of hard to look at the last one of that line and try to draw too many conclusions about what newbies want or need. Mm-hmm. Because it was also trying to serve an audience that was dedicated to just playing basic. So they're going to want more complexity too.
Right. Well, that's why I brought up the fact that all that stuff that was mentioned that should be taken out was actually added back in to those box sets later on. As you went on, when your character increased in complexity or in levels, then it also had a commensurate increase in complexity. And to do that, they had to add those things back to the game. But I don't think it was planned that way necessarily at the beginning, because I'm not sure that they expected people to stick with the basic D&D. I think they thought everybody would hop over to AD&D, and it turns out people really loved basic D&D. So, it was a viable line for 15 years almost.
Thaddeus, actually, that's a good welcome, Thaddeus. that's a good segue, because you had a good comment about increasing complexity in today's discussion.
Which comment was that?
That comment today, we're talking about the complexity of the game, if you will, particularly with new players. And you had said something to the effect of that, wouldn't it be great if you had like a very basic sheet, and then as a character levels up, well, explain that. Yeah. Would you elaborate, please?
Here's my thoughts. My thoughts are this, that with the character sheet, it's huge. It's, it's 2 full pages front and back. The original character sheet was, and half of that information that was on that character sheet, new players don't use. And so wouldn't it be great if character creation was basically built around adding things to your character sheet every level? So your very first character is about the size of one of those game day character sheets that they give you. The little, it's not a 3x, what is it? Like, it's a 5x11 card,
like,
or something.
Isn't it like, it's 4x6 or 4x8 or something like that?
Yeah, it's just this tiny little thing, and it's got the most basic, a couple powers on it. It's got a couple of your trained skills, which, I think you don't even need at this point. So it'd be like beginner D&D. It's levels 1 through 5. First level, you've got your stats. You get to pick maybe one skill that you're trained in. You get like one or two, like one at will power and one encounter power. And then that's your character, and a little bit of gear. And then when you hit second level, you get a feat, or you get a utility power, or, you add one thing onto that character sheet. And then at second level, you add another thing. And so that way, as new players are going, they get to learn the entire layout of the character sheet, instead of having this whole 2-page sheet of just kind of garbled information thrown at you. Mm-hmm. They're used to, first level, a lot of fighting, maybe 1 or 2 skill challenges or, uses for skills, since everybody's got like 1 trained skill. Second level, maybe you give them another skill, you make skill challenges a little more prevalent. Third level, you just keep adding to it until you finally, when you kick them out of the basic, the starter set, at their 6th level would basically be first level in the regular game. You'd have a fully made character. And, they'd be pretty weak, because if you get hit points all the way up through that quote unquote first five levels, that would really shut up the oh, but a house cat can't kill my players. Well, they can if they play through this kind of, I guess it would be like -5 to 0 level.
Yeah, I wouldn't like that.
A badass house cat.
Yes.
Yeah, I would like it though. I disagree with making it so combat focused. I'd actually think you should do more skills first and then add powers instead of adding skills. I like having the skills in the beginning.
But Tracy, you want them a different format, right? You want them as not just like acrobatics or athletics with a number. You want it to say like, you know, with this skill you can do like these four things.
Or give you ideas. It's not even so that you can do these four things.
Right.
These are sorts of things you can do given how talented you are. You probably still would end up having some sort of modifier on there. Or I don't know what you could do. You could do the die size for trying to figure out if you pass. But that might be too hard when they switch over to doing a d20 with it. But, you know, letting people who are trained in athletics do jumps without doing a check would be good.
See, I'm imagining this the same way you walk into some, like, a large role-playing game in a video game. And yes, I'm going there with the video games to role-playing
games.
That's
all right. That's perfectly legit.
You know, video games, a lot of video games do that slow build of like, okay, here's your sword. Use, you know, press A to use it. And then you use it a little bit and it's like, okay, now hold down A to charge up a more powerful attack. And so then they give you little powers and little powers and little powers. Right. When I'm talking about like these first five levels aren't the same. It's going to take you, you know, 3 sessions to get from level 1 to level 2. I'm talking by the end of their first session, they should be at like level 3.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to do it by levels though. You could just do it by how you do your adventure.
Right, but the point of adding levels to that is to get new players. My thought is to introduce them to everything slowly, but in like one or two sittings. And so levels are a part of the game. And so they have to get used to this. Oh, what happens at level up? Oh, when I level, I get this. Okay. It's kind of like with Munchkin. Munchkin is a really great way that I found to get like my girlfriend to understand the basic concepts of games, because leveling and equipment and all that kind of stuff are all incorporated into it. And so if you do this introductory system basically in the same context that the game at large is presented, that will make the transition a lot easier. You know, if you hit them with once they're out of the whole beginners, you know, D&D, or I don't, is that what it used to be called? It was like basic is what it was called, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, it's basic.
Yeah. So if you get them out of the basic and then suddenly, you know, like you were saying with your skills, if how the regular game does the skills is way different than how the basic did the skills, then they won't want to leave basic. They'll want to stick with what they had, or they're going to have a hard time. You know, my idea is take everything that the game is and then cut it down into small digestible parts and then give it to them little bits at a time. And so then when they've played a couple sessions with their character, by the time they're done with that, they're kind of grasping more readily what a full character is. Instead of getting it all at once, saying, okay, this is your first level character. He's got equipment. He's got skills. He's got powers. He's got stats. And, you know, this is all the stuff that you have to track.
No, I know. I said similar stuff, too. I don't like the focus on combat.
Yeah, but like I said, the combat is just like the, here's your sword. Okay,
I understand,
here's a kobold.
What you said.
You killed a couple. It's not like the entire night is spent in combat. It's just the first thing you introduce them to is combat.
Yeah, what I'm saying is I don't necessarily like the first thing you introduce them to is combat. It depends. That's all I'm saying.
No, I can see Tracy's point, because that even in the role-playing games the computer role-playing games that you're talking about, you often get a whole crap load of introduction about your character sometimes, or where you're from, or things like that beforehand, even before you even pick up the first item to go kill wolves or whatever it is. So, I mean, you guys are both right, actually, as far as I'm concerned. It could go either way. My take, actually, is that it should be more like a choose-your-own-adventure, and that it would be solo play. I really like the most recent Redbox set because that solo adventure, that solo play activity. I think that it should be a DM player thing, one-on-one, because that way you have some kind of development of the story for the player. But the player should be solo, and then you introduce little things within the story, some kind of adventure-based thing to, like you were saying, Thad, to introduce these different parts of the sheet more and more. And then once you hit second level, now you join your party. And you can bring in the other people who have already gone through their solo adventures, and you can go on your way. But you've done that first level on your own. You kind of get a feel for stuff, and you now know how to handle it, and can now go on to the second. That's my own take. I mean, that's my own personal.
Here's my issue with that, is that if you have a group of five people, and four of them have never played before, are you going to take four nights to run them all through their own little choose-your-own-adventure?
Yep. You betcha.
If that's what it takes.
See, some of us don't have that kind of time. Like, I don't have five extra nights. I'd be 5 weeks out before the game actually started with my group. By then, I'd probably lost half my players.
Well, but see, so here's the thing, though, is that, like, for example, the 83 Mincer Red Box, the first thing you did was a solo adventure by yourself as a player, and the next thing you did was a solo adventure with a DM and the player going through. And then if you took a night for each player to go through both of those, you'd have those five nights. But at the end of that, that's part of your story, right? So you're saying that the game doesn't even start till you do those. But my thing is, the game actually did start, because what you do is you make those things that they go through part of the game. You make that the beginning of their adventure.
But the person that did the first week would have to wait over 4 weeks before they even get to play.
That's what I'm saying. I've got one guy with a 4 week lag time until his next game. What's stopping him from just going and finding another game and being like, dude, I didn't want to wait 4 weeks until you guys all got done? Or one guy has to wait 4 weeks to get his first game in once he gets into the group.
If I can interject one thing, by the way, hi Thaddeus.
Hi, how you doing?
/Jonathan. Nice to meet you, man.
I'm doing good. What's your call? What call sign do you go by?
Elder Trevory. I'm on your side.
Oh yeah. Oh, you right? Yeah. I knew that name looked familiar.
It's all right. I did that the other day. Who was that? I did that the other day. Dad, it was
that was on Arcane Springboard.
That's right. Yeah, Arcane Springboard. Yeah.
You know, it's really funny. I know Arcane Springboard. I've known him for over 10 years. He and I used to play Warhammer together. I lived in Canada for a period of time, and we actually met at a con and got to hang out and everything. So it's kind of cool to see him come full circle and meet up with him again. One thing that'll make all of you guys happy. I don't know if you have a copy of the new Red Box. If you don't, I'll read it to you. But on page two, which is actually the first page with text, it specifically says that the whole process that Randall was talking about, it's actually designed to be done by yourself before you play. Mm-hmm. It says you can learn to play the Dungeons & Dragons fantasy role-playing game by yourself simply by reading through this book. And at the end of the book, you're going to have a character that's pre-made and ready to go for a group. So what Thaddeus was concerned about, where he's going to have to take multiple players, you know, multiple nights, and each time they'll make a character and delay the game quite a bit, they can all do that before you even start playing. And it's really straightforward. It's really simple. The good thing about it is it's actually similar to what Thaddeus was saying with video games. Quite often, a lot of video games will have what's called a newbie area, where you're kind of handheld through the mechanics of the game itself with some monsters that are extremely easy to kill or training dummies or something like that. And by the time you walk out of that newbie area, you're by yourself most of the time if you're in a multiplayer game like an MMO or something. But you've basically mastered everything you know to go out and actually play the game itself. Which is exactly what they did with the Red Box. They said, if you buy this Red Box, take this book, go through all these steps, we'll explain everything to you, and you're done. You got a character, you're ready to play.
Yeah, and they said they could all be doing that on one night themselves, and then the next time you meet, boom, you're there. That's certainly one way to do it. I think the drawback with the Red Box is that, I mean, I realize it's built in as a lead into the Essentials set, but I think it's kind of limited as far as your choices. Now, that may not be a bad thing, but unless there is a mechanic that allows you to specialize your character, I mean, there's four archetypes. You know, you have the fighter, wizard, cleric, thief. But if you can then, you know, well, maybe the cleric wants to be a druid instead, or maybe the thief is an assassin, or maybe the cleric is a paladin or the fighter is a paladin. So in other words, there would have to me, there would have to be a mechanic that would allow people to make a little more specific choice as to what they wanted their character to be. The red box doesn't really do that. The solo adventure gives you those four choices, the basic choices, and that's it. And so,
that's probably a good thing, though. I mean, we know about paladins and we know about assassins and all that, but the new players don't, and you kind of want them, you kind of want the classes that a true new player picks from to be radically different so that they can start understanding how the choices they make interact with the game.
Right, but if they start there, they're sort of locked in. And so there really needs to be a way for them to, if they suddenly get this other material and say, wow, you mean I could have been a druid? You know, or I could have been, well, whatever, name a class. But then that's going to be, it's awkward.
Well, why not just create a different character then? When they've gotten to that level of knowledge with it.
Well, and that's what the game suggests. I mean, the red box suggests that as well. But it's, I don't know. I would like to have some kind of continuity there. I would hate to think that, now I just start all over again.
See, this is the heart of the question, right? Like, how big is the first campaign that those PCs go on? How big should it be? Should it be 4 sessions, 5 sessions, 10 sessions? You know, should they just play 4 or 5 sessions and then you're absolutely positive that they know, you know, 90% of the mechanics and they're pretty confident with it? And then you sort of say, okay, that's the end of this little campaign arc. Now you can feel free to make whole new characters. And, you know, do you limit the complexity of what they choose at that point, or you know what I mean? So this is actually part of the issue. It's not just how do they make their first characters, or how do you introduce them to the game, or how do they run a solo. It's how do you get from there to the point where they might want to change things. And what if you had this really awesome, you know, massive campaign planned, and they get to the 6th session, they go, okay, well, this was fun and I liked, you know, that I made this PC and all that, but I'm looking at all these other things now because I understand all that complexity. When I read it, I know what things mean, and I'd like to do something different.
Yeah, I really think campaigns for newer players shouldn't concentrate on continuity. They should they should allow trying out new things as they discover them.
You might even want to limit it down to something as small as a delve or a module. I mean, I personally wouldn't give a campaign to a set of new players, period. I would test their water. I mean,
but
I
you
would
know,
not.
But see, well, yeah. my issue with that, though, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I agree in principle. But my issue is a lot of delves are really combat focused, and maybe not so much anymore, but you know, if the goal is to teach somebody the combat mechanics of the game, I can do that in a couple of 2-hour sessions, no problem. But I want them to understand an RPG from the broad scope of the game. I want them to know about skills and storylines and campaigns, you know. So if I understand that you want to teach them in little chunks, but you don't, you know, this is sort of the whole reason why I also don't want their sort of mini character sheet to be combat focused, because it's too easy to make this a tactical war game, a tactical board game by itself. It is part tactical board game, but that's not all that it is. And I want the new player to experience all of it, not just the combat part. It's the same problem I have with the first couple of seasons of Encounters. They seemed very combat focused. They're a little better now. But because there's only so much you can do in 2 hours, right? But
I think the issue is the way that people are looking at the question that's being asked. The question is, what would you do, or at least the question as I saw it is, what would you do to make the game more approachable to new players? Mm-hmm. My thought was, you know, the biggest hurdle is the rules. You know, it's laden with rules for everything, but combat has the most amount of rules. So the idea for me was get the learning of the rules out of the way quickly, and then, you know, then they can start to learn the broader spectrum of the game. And so,
I was going to say that gives emphasis to the rules, and then you're teaching them to think in terms of the rules instead of saying, hey, you know what? You're this fighter guy with this huge axe, and there's an orc staring down at you. What do you do? Rather than talking about the rules, just say, hey, I swing my axe. Okay, that's great. So, or I try to talk to him. Oh, you want to talk to him? Okay, well, what languages do you have? Or, hell, I don't even care if you have a language. You know, do you speak common? Or maybe do you have a reason to know orc already? Oh, you have a reason to know orc. Okay, write that down on your character sheet. Let's continue on and talk about the situations and how to resolve situations and have the rules come in that way rather than teaching the rules.
Thaddeus, let me kind of expand upon what I said with the delve. I'm going to give you an example of something that had happened at DDXP that was just amazing. I went through the new, what was the name of the module? The hell, the Heroes of Shadow stuff in it. I'm tired. I'm kind of losing my mind here.
Calorel's
Revenge? Yeah, that was it. I went through Calorel's Revenge with an excellent, excellent DM at DDXP. And in essence, she treated it almost like a delve in the sense that we really only had one major combat encounter. She actually completely eliminated one, and the first one, she hand waved the first one, eliminated the second one, and then the third one was combat. So we really only played a delve. But she made that delve into the most amazing experience that I would run any new player through in a heartbeat. It was so, so good. And she did this in the context of, hey, I'm giving you guys these Heroes of Shadow characters, new classes, new races, etc. You can read them, but she said, I don't want any questions about them before we play. And I thought, that's really weird. You know, that's what everyone's going to want to do. Like, what is a binder warlock? Oh, my God, what is this? You know? And she said, no, as we play, I'll answer your questions as they come up. But I don't want you to focus on the fact that you're playing a character class you've never seen before. I want you to focus on the story. And then what she did was she built up the first probably half hour of our session strictly with role playing. And through that role-playing, she explained to us how not only what the new classes and races were, but how they worked in the game. And I played the Binder Warlock, and I had no clue what a Binder Warlock was, much less what it did. But by the time we actually got to the first encounter, I was like, wow, my character is basically here as a warlock to harness and essentially consume souls. That's what she does. And it was the most amazing experience ever. And I think that's key to a new player, too, is that it's not as much about how much, you know, how comprehensive your adventure, your campaign is for the first players. It's how you also present it to them. And if you sit them down and say, look, you just made a character, blah, blah, blah. Here's a whole, you know, verbal diarrhea of combat, of here's how all these mechanics work. You're going to lose them really, really quickly. But if you can do that in the context of role-playing or explaining how things work from a flavor standpoint, it makes it so much more fun. Yeah. And they're more apt to pick up on it.
So I'm going to keep finishing my point, which was the question was posed, and some of us looked at, okay, this is a very complex part of the game, and so we want to simplify it. And other people kind of tackled it as, how do we make this a game where we can teach people to role-play? Which I think we're answering two different sides of the coin. And so for one person to say, no, it's wrong for you to just do all this role play stuff, they need to learn the rules, or somebody else to say, no, it's wrong that you're giving them combat because the rules aren't what's important. That's not an argument I'm interested in having. I was just asked to share what my views were coming from Twitter. And so I know it's weird not wanting to get in an argument, but I will say this, you know, I feel like every time I throw out my idea of that that Randall asked me to talk about, everybody just keeps saying, you're wrong because if you put a sword in their hand, I'm not saying that, you know, you sit down for a 4-hour session and you have 3 hours of combat. I'm saying give them their character sheet. You know, you can put them in a really quick combat with one kobold. It can be a 5-minute combat, and then the rest of the game you can start introducing them to their character. For me, I just think jumping in with both feet is a really great way to start the game. Here's a sword, kill something, now let's explore. That's just a philosophy. I'm not saying it's the way it has to be done, but I also don't think it's wrong. I think that there's a lot of ways that you can introduce people to the game, and I think by telling people that they have to do role play first and then combat comes later, you're basically telling someone that they're DMing wrong. And I don't think you can tell someone they're DMing wrong unless no one comes to their gaming nights, and then you can probably tell them that there's something wrong with what they're doing.
Well, that's not what I was saying.
Yeah. So let me defend my statements then, since you're taking it as that I'm saying that it should be role playing first. That's not what I'm saying at all. As a matter of fact, I just went a couple of weeks ago through two sessions on two different nights where I was teaching a brand new player how to play. And I told him he could make whatever character he wanted. He had access to the character builder, so he did. He made a thief. And the first thing I did was basically put him through a delve. But I let it play out with him directing the actions by asking him, okay, what do you do next? And then, you know, if he said, well, I want to do this thing, I'd say, okay. You know, and I would ask him specifics to get I would ask him more specific questions to get specifically at what he really wanted to do. And I would give him descriptions of the area where he was as appropriate. And then I would tell him, okay, now mechanically, here's how we do this. And for example, he wanted to sneak into this room where he saw a goblin or something. And he said, well, I want to use stealth and I want to go over there. And so I had him do it. And he said, oh, I rolled this. Do I pass? And I said, well, you don't really know if you passed, right? All you know is the number that you rolled, and you'll know whether you passed or not based on the response that you get either from the DM or from the other people in the room your character's trying to stealth into or whatever. But anyway, my point is, the way I did it was let him lead. He didn't want to immediately get into the fight, so he didn't. But what he did was do different things, and I would show him, and if he got stuck, I would give him different options and have him pick things off of his character sheet that he needed to know how to use. You know, how do I do this skill thing? How do I use this thing? Or I have this item that I bought at the store. What do I do with this kind of thing? And I let him lead the way. But I get what you're saying. I'm not trying to say that the right way to do it is to do all role playing. But I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know. Maybe there is no right way because different people are coming to the game with different ideas about what they expect from it. But I don't know. I mean, yeah, I get what you're saying. I understand your point.
I understand it too, Faze. And I think kind of the elephant in the room here is that I don't think we're going to come up with a single right way that works for every player out there. I think we're also going to have to add a little bit of, you know, what works for this person. And there's going to be people who totally jump all over the full-on combat mechanics thing. You know, you give them a bunch of dice, you give them a rule set, and that's what they want to do. And there's going to be other people who want pure role-playing, and there's people who want a mix of both. And I think a good DM is going to be able to play to those strengths that the player has and see that, hey, you know, this guy is going to be more combat-focused. That's why I'm going to approach him, but I'm going to throw in some role-playing if he wants to or not at all. And I think that's a big, big part of being a good DM, and it's one of those things that's really hard to put on paper.
So, Tracy, I sort of stepped on you. Did you want to make your point? I'm sorry.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I agree with you, Sam, that I think it should be player-driven. I think the DM should present situations. Like I said, with the there's a big orc standing in front of you. I mean, you can decide to attack it if you want. You know, that's one way of resolving the conflict. Another one would be try to talk your way out of it. You know, that's why I'm not in favor of it, of taking the skills off of the sheet even at the very beginning, because I think a player should always have both those options available. The thing that I worry about more is that in a product that's meant and aimed at new players, which is part of what we were talking about, that a lot of this concentrates on the players, but not the DMs. And, you know, they're going to be a number. I mean, the goal of a lot of these products is that somebody could buy this for a kid or teenager or an adult for Christmas, birthdays, whatever, as a present. And somebody who has never played D&D before can play it. And that's why I really wonder if it's better to have an adventure that goes through each of these different items, because then the DM can learn too. Whoever gets elected for that job at the beginning can learn this is at least one way to play a D&D game. These are some of the topics you can explore. You know, sidebars with, you know, history of the game stuff, maybe, that, you know, they might want to know when they talk to other D&D players, or other avenues of exploration if this isn't what appeals to you. I think that could be really cool.
And it's always go ahead.
I was just going to say, I wish there was a way, and maybe it's possible, that maybe for the first three levels you don't have a class. Maybe you do some things and there's sort of a branching tree of well, you've approached these kinds of things in this way. Maybe you don't really tell, the player doesn't tell you, well, I'm a fighter or I'm a thief, but you go through the scenarios. There's combat, there's areas of non-combat, but whatever. And then based on how those scenarios are handled, and maybe there are options given during those different encounters or whatever, and at the end of that, and you've leveled up, you know, three times, and maybe as you're doing that, you gain more information on your sheet. But then you decide at the very end of that process, going into, like, I guess, what, third or fourth level, that's when you can choose your class. Like, well, you've decided to lean towards these things. You almost always chose the magic option, or you almost always chose an option based on faith, or you almost always chose subterfuge, or you always charged into combat. And so these are maybe the best options available for you for class. So you don't lay the class pressure on them right at the beginning.
Isn't that what they do in the new Red Box?
Kind of, but like I was saying earlier, I think it's too limited. Because then you have to, I mean, sure, you could choose another class, but you've forgotten, I mean, you have to pretty much just eliminate what you did in the Red Box. There's no continuity. Well, and that bugs me.
We didn't have, I know in the game we played, the Fellowship of the Tweet, which started the round table, we didn't have bards, and we didn't have druids or anything like that, but, I mean, the character Cassidy I played was a bard. Like, that's what she did. She played music and as a way of doing her stuff. I mean...
Right, but the game does have multiple classes, so the point... My point is that those options are going to want, at some point, they're going to want those options. And so don't pressure the options at first, or don't pressure them at all with options. Instead, let it be much more free-flowing, and then, based on those game actions, decide what you want to be.
But what I'm saying is that the class that they pick for, the class isn't the character. The character can continue with different attributes later if they wanted to change the class.
Mm-hmm. Randall, I wish that they would have not used classes at all in the Red Box and instead used the archetypes. So, like, striker, defender, leader.
You know, that wouldn't have been a bad idea. That's a good point.
Yeah, I wish they would have gone with that, because it also then make it easier for you to choose those other classes. So you're like, hey, I like striker types, and then here's all the strikers you can choose from.
Right. Well, and even more complicated than that, you could say, look, you know, you did this mainly, you could do like some kind of post-analysis where you go, well, you solved these problems using a striker method, you solved these being more like of a defender or a controller, and so now you have classes that, and of course they identify the classes of having either part striker, part controller, you know, that kind of thing, and so you have more choices then. But you're right, absolutely, I think that would have been an excellent way to do it. I like that idea a lot. Yeah, Tracy, I apologize. I'm a grognard to a little bit. I'm a little bit old school. To me, I mean, I loved it. I loved the subclass idea in AD&D. We all knew that there were fighter, thieves, magic users, and clerics. But under fighter, there was paladin and ranger. Under thief, there was assassin. Under magic user, there was illusionist. And under cleric, there was druid. And so you had this idea that while there were four archetypes, there were these other things you might branch off into. And a bard was like this mix, ugly mix of like all like three different things, and as an appendix in the end of the book, which is awesome. But I mean, it was just, and that's me. That is totally my own.
And it was hard to be a bard in 1E.
I did.
It was hard to be a
bard, dude. 23rd level bard. And
yeah,
and,
I'm not saying she mechanically was a bard, but that's what she was in any sort of character type.
Right, and you can certainly do that, but I need to have more framework than that for when I'm playing. And no, I totally get what you're saying. I for myself need more framework than that, so I can't. You know, when I play the fighter, Chaz Standish, he's a fighter.
He may be. Do you need that same level of framework when you're new to a game, or is it only when you've understood what the differences between classes are?
I need to have that framework beforehand. So, in other words, if I went into Pathfinder, which is not something I'm familiar with, I'd want to read about the classes first, and then base my character's story on that role, that job.
Right. So. I mean, but Pathfinder is close. I mean, it's based on D&D. It's an extension of D&D. Yeah. No, yeah. I understand. But, I mean, like, if you went to an entire... I don't know if you've ever played... I haven't played one either, but, like, a cyberpunk game. Would you need to have... How much of an understanding would you have to have before your first game?
I'd want some. I'd want the, you know, I'd want a handbook. I'd want to be looking at it. Yeah, that's me. Now, like, Star Frontiers is a good example of that. I created for my free conversion. I created four different classes based on the classes that were in Star Frontiers. You were either like a scientist or an explorer or an enforcer, which is like a fighter type, you know, a soldier, or a technical expert, you know, a mechanic slash, you know, robotics geek kind of a person. And so, but I would want to know going into that game, I'd want to know what each of those kind of did and what their job specialties were before I even started playing. That's for me.
There's a problem though, and the problem is, Randall, and I'm in the same boat with you, so this is that's why I feel like I can say this, is that we've been playing for so long that we bring enough assumptions into a game that if it's a game that's a level or class-based game, like a D&D or a Traveler or something like that, we bring those assumptions in and they help us, and therefore we can start just by reading, you know, all of the, you know, all the class material and all about all that and sort of make decisions and either, you know, supports our assumptions or sort of breaks them down or changes them in some way. And then we're okay with the game. But we've been playing for a long time. You know, bringing those assumptions in sometimes hurts us with some of the more modern games like a Fiasco or even a Fate system game sometimes. But, you know, it's really hard for me to sit and listen to you say what you just said to Tracy, because I totally agree with you. I feel the same way, but I don't consider you a beginning player, even if we're talking about you picking up an RPG that you've never looked at before. And so I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, so for Tracy to ask you or I, well, but as a beginner, if you've never played that game before, what do you need to begin with? We can't really answer that question as a beginner because there's too much baggage connected to our RPG history. So
maybe, I don't know, Sam. I think I can separate myself from that conversation, but I don't know. Maybe I have some bias. Sure, I've admitted to it, but I don't know if I could say that I'm not couldn't completely separate myself from it. Mm-hmm. Because I have played with noobs.
I don't mean it as a derogatory. Don't get me wrong.
I don't like it that way.
I just feel like when I say something about, well, as a beginning player for this game, like I always sort of feel like, well, I'm still bringing assumptions in because I have a long RPG history. So I'm not really a beginning player. And I when I think of a beginning player, the sort of beginning – the ideal beginning player that I think about is someone who is new to RPGs. Mm-hmm. So anyway, I just want to throw that out there. So
no, that's fine. Yeah,
I agree with you, Sam, but I can tell you from personal experience, one thing that helps that quite a bit is trying other types of games that aren't completely new to you, like you know nothing about. I have a game that I've been wanting to introduce Tracy to because I think it's just right up her alley, Eclipse Phase.
Oh, yeah. I love that game.
Yeah, and it was really hard for me to wrap my head around how I'm holding my hands like I'm doing quotes your classes work in that game, because classes in Eclipse Phase are not anything like we know as traditional RPGs, and I just walked into this with my D&D background going, what the hell is going on? You know, I had no idea what this stuff was, but it's basically just a rework of everything, and it helped me go back to D&D and say, okay, hey, look, you know, I looked at this from a different perspective because now I see as a new player, you know, hey, I may know this like the back of my hand, but it doesn't mean that everybody else does, you know. So, mm-hmm. But Tracy, you'd love Eclipse Phase. You really would.
I'll have to try it. I have so many.
I'm running one at Gen Con. I'm running one at Gen Con.
What's that?
Eclipse Phase.
Oh, is that it? Science fiction.
Yep, it's transhuman future. Yeah.
So mutants.
Not mutants. More like. No, not even. Not really. It's more like we have been able to integrate. Full cybernetics into humans.
So, okay, so cybernetic people. Okay,
but, transhumanism.
But it's more also there's a really thick theme to the game because of the way that they spell out how the future happened, mm-hmm. And it's very, very cool. It's a very good story for the game, and it really fits with the way the whole thing works. But basically, you can switch bodies because you can upload your what's considered your ego. And, you know, it's basically almost like a save point in an RPG where you can say, okay, well, you know, you might lose 2 or 3 weeks here and there because if your current body dies, you can go back to your ego before your current body died. It's the first sort of RPG where a save point works, although it's not really a save point because you can actually work into the story to really mess with the player's heads, but... That's sort of it's a really cool. It's not just the system that makes it really cool. It's the actual background and the way it works. But anyway,
right.
The character in it is not dependent upon what class they are or what race they are. The character is the character itself. So if you're playing like a big burly male brawler type 1 week, there's a good chance that the next week your character could be a female mechanic. You know, something
like
completely. Yeah, very much like Quantum Leap.
Yeah, I can see. I see the idea. Interesting thought. I've not played a game like that, so that would be interesting.
I'm running it at Gen Con. Actually, yeah. I haven't. It's a scheduled event that's full, but I'm actually running a non-scheduled one the day before.
Okay.
So you're free to send me an email and tell me that you want to be in it.
Okay. I'm writing. Some stuff for a Cortex Plus game, so I've also had to relearn some stuff in D&D in terms of like larger role-playing games. So it's been kind of interesting in that too. I know that I don't count as a newbie anymore either. I just happen to have more recent memories of being lost and alone.
Chris Sims had a really good retweet today as an answer to one of his questions, and it kind of stuck out in my mind. Someone basically said, for the first session, remove character sheets and ask the new player what they want to do and then use the ad hoc DC and damage charts. And I really like that idea, not just because of what it says, but it's kind of saying, hey, you as the DM, you need to listen more than you talk the first session.
Right.
Let the players kind of drive what they want to do. And I think that's really important too, is that, you know, let the players tell you, this is what I want to do. You know, if it's roll a bucket of dice, roll a bucket of dice.
You know, I wish I'd had... I don't know if you can still find it anymore, but Amber was supposed to have been a great opportunity to do that kind of thing because it was a diceless role-playing game.
Yeah, that's tough to find.
And I probably could find a bootleg copy out there somewhere, but I've never had the guts to play it because I've heard it's really... I mean, you're literally sitting around the living room and... You just make shit up as you go along. Excuse my language, but kind of. I mean, like I said, I don't know much about the game other than it's set in Zelazny's universe. But you know, that's about it. So, and then you just run with it. And I thought it might be interesting to play, but I think you really have to be very comfortable with that kind of situation. I mean, it was the kind of thing we talked about several months ago when we were talking about what was the book? It'd come out, Dresden Files. And how there was much more, you know, open-ended type actions and role-playing in it than there was very hard-coded things. And mm-hmm. And so it's the comfort level of different people. I know the players that I have right now would be totally lost in a game without pretty strict rules because they're just not used to it. I mean, they're just not – it's beyond their experience. It'd be like improvisational at theater. And so it's kind of a scary step for people to make. So,
Dresden Files is actually pretty crunchy. It's really crunchy, actually. And you have a 2-page PC sheet, and it's just got different mechanics from a D&D style mechanics. But your players actually would probably be a little bit uncomfortable for a couple sessions, but they would probably not have very many problems getting into it, actually. It's just more narrative in terms of it's written into the rules that the players can determine things about the environment, about the NPCs, about, you know, different things they're dealing with. So it's just a matter of getting used to being able to do that and to use it to your advantage. But it's right in the mechanics, and there's a lot of crunch to the Fate Dresden Files game.
Yeah. Well, maybe, okay.
Yeah, when held up just next to D&D, it looks like, you know, an insanely story-based game. But when you hold it up next to something like Amber Diceless, then it really looks like it skews more towards, you know, the D&D side.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry, Tracy, I cut you off again.
Oh, no. I see. Cortex Plus like that, too. But you had said something about, Randall, that your players need it, the structure, because that's what they're used to. How did they get used to that structure?
Well, to be honest with you, I couldn't tell you about all their histories. They've all had various experiences playing different kind of role-playing games, but I can tell by the way they role-play at the table that they're not comfortable with a lot of freestyle stuff. I mean, they'll roll with it if I'm leading the action, but they don't cut loose, in other words, and very rarely. I have one group that I think might lean more towards that than the other, but the one with what I would call my peer group game, where I have a lot of people from work that I know, and of course Anna's in both games, so she's kind of in both worlds, but because it's not my newbie group, so but they're all experienced, but they do not freeform roleplay very often. They'll do it if they're kind of pushed, but they just don't like it. I don't think they're comfortable with it. It's like I said, it's like getting up on stage, and you know, you have this whole, are they going to make fun of me because I said something or because I'm acting a certain way, you know? And they're just like that. You know, they're all 30 plus year old people. It's just the way it is. And I'm okay with that, but you know.
What are you trying to say, Randall? What are you trying to say?
You know exactly what I'm trying to say.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, so, and I'm okay with that, and I can work with that, and within that context, and we have a great time, and we have a lot of game sessions that are fantastic. I would, in fact, myself, if I was to sit down and play Fiasco with a bunch of people, particularly with a new group, I would be like, look, guys, I'm a total noob here. I don't do a lot of, I would have to like lay it all out in the beginning and say, I'm not probably going to be good at this. I'm not even sure how to do this for sure. So I'm going to screw up and be stupid.
let me blow a little positive sunshine up your ass here and tell you that.
Okay.
You should totally never go into a role-playing game or any kind of a situation like that, because if you lay down the ground rules, listen, guys, I'm probably going to suck at this. You know, you're going to have to, you know, if you go in apologizing, acting like you're not going to be good at it, then chances are you're going to be thinking that way through the whole game. Just sit down, be quiet, and then start playing the game, man. And then you start to realize really quickly, hey, man, this is fun and I can do this. And the less you have to apologize, you know, about how bad you think you're going to be in the beginning, just the better time you're going to have and the better you're going to do at it. At least that's the way I kind of think about things.
Well, yeah. you're probably right about that. Yeah.
And I can tell you.
You can't. Oh, go ahead. Tracy.
No, I was just going to say, I can tell you that a lot of people don't know how to run Fiasco. It's just one of those things you learn as you play it sort of games. So they probably are no better at it than you are. Even if there was a way of being good at it.
Yeah. Thaddeus, you know, Randall, part of it is also.
Thaddeus, Randall must be having a good-looking day.
Thaddeus, I agree with you, but Randall, the other thing is, because you're a DM, you have to think on your feet a lot more often than you think you do, and that would make you probably a good candidate for Fiasco. So I think Thaddeus is right. If you just went in without having a preconceived, like, oh, I'm probably going to suck at this, you'd probably be pretty good.
Randall, I might try it. I'll try to find a Fiasco game at Gen Con.
Sit down at the table, and the first thing you need to tell yourself is say, I am fucking Randall Wackel. It's my day off. I've been drinking. I'm just saying. I'm Randall Walker, you know, fucking co-host on the DM Round podcast. You know, I am the man. Who cares? Who cares how good I am at this game? They want me to be here anyway.
All right, all right, all right. You guys are killing me with your peer pressure. So, that, and that's cool. And I think you're right, Daddy. It's, I actually do. I mean, that's just kind of me. I'm sort of, like, self-effacing that way anyway. But, yeah, just, no, I get it. And I think you're probably right. And I do write creatively and things like that. So I think I would have fun doing Fiasco. But I think there's part of it, at least when I'm watching tweets about it and stuff like that, I get this feeling that if you don't know a lot of these inside jokes, if you will, or inside things in regards to, like, for example, I've not seen every Coen Brothers movie, you know? I've not seen all of these kind – I don't know all these cultural – I know some, but I don't know every single one of these little cultural things that, you know, is supposed to make the game interesting.
Yeah, no, but Randall, so the thing with that is I actually felt the same way you did. But the thing is, when you read the rule book for Fiasco and then you play it, you know, the play sets aren't the play sets don't have to do anything with this pop culture thing. There are play sets that are specifically set up to reference a particular style of thing. And some of them reference, like, there's a Harry Potter based, you know, one, but you don't have to play those. You can play a generic playset and it'll be in a particular style, but that doesn't mean you have to know, like, for example, all the Coen Brothers movies. Cause I'm like you, I'm sort of a pop culture lame-o. Like, I don't really know a lot of the more recent stuff cause I don't go to the movies and I don't really watch TV. So, you know, I'm way behind on lots of pop culture references but it doesn't that doesn't really have anything to do with it. It depends on the group of people, of course. If they're all sitting around the table and they're making inside joke references to movies you haven't seen, yeah, it's not going to be as fun. But
right.
if you're with a group of people that is the sort of the same on your same wavelength, then you're playing a generic playset. It's not going to affect the game.
Okay. Well, I certainly still want to give it a try. I'm not scared of it so much that I don't want to play it ever. It would be a radical change from what I've usually played. So, and it would be, I mean, I would think I'd have fun at it, but I just don't know. Yeah.
Because Randall, we'll just get together at Gen Con and we'll make somebody run a game for us.
Let's do it. All right.
Let's do it. I've never played it. So yeah. Love to.
I would love to break in and say I would do that, but I've already got like 8 games. So I really can't. I'm sorry, guys.
Sam, I am knocking on your door at freaking 2:00 in the morning. It's like, damn it, yeah. We're half drunk. We're all playing Fiasco. Let's do this.
Well, one of the games I'm in is a 6-hour 1E game, so I won't even be done till 2 a.m. one of those days.
Oh, jeez, dude.
So how many of those games are we in, Sam?
One of them, I guess. Three scheduled events filled up, and I've got 2 unscheduled events, and then I have to try to schedule all of you boneheads into one game. I don't know how I'm going to do it because everybody has such tough schedules, so I don't know. It's going to be hard.
We'll play a diceless game during the DM round deal slot.
There you go.
Nice. Oh, wow. That would be something else.
Yeah. Sorry to you 100 audience members. We didn't get to get our game in, so we're just going to play. Have fun in the audience. Yeah.
Speaking of which, this would be a good time to discuss the fact that we've sold we're down to 46 seats left as of recording of this, which I love the fact that the Paizo seminar that's going on at the exact same time has like 50 something tickets left. So we're kicking Paizo's ass.
I haven't checked.
Take that, Paizo.
Suck it, Paizo. There you go.
Wait, the Paizo's a great company.
No, they are.
They are, but they're nothing compared to the power of DM's Roundtable, I guess.
You know, we're a cult of personality, so you know that's why it's so attractive.
No, I think it's awesome. When I filled out that form, I thought they were going to give us like a 20 or 30 person room. And so when I saw that there were 100 tickets that first day, I was like, oh, crap, we're going to have a huge room and there's going to be like 19 people in it all spread out.
Yeah, really. Clapping all hollow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we were still going to have to try to be all energetic, even though we were sorely disappointed at how many people showed up. And I just thought it was just going to be crazy. But yeah. Then I looked up one day and I was just like, holy crap, we've almost sold 50 tickets. So
yeah, what we need to do is get 54. We've sold 54 so far.
Well, if you don't quite fill the room, then we need to have like Enrique standing there at the doorway as like like half drunk, you know, because he said he's going to be anyway. So
I'm going to take him out and get him drunk before the podcast just to make sure he's good and ready.
So I actually had an idea about maybe we could print out, like, we could have people submit questions as they're walking in the door, like give them a form to fill out, and we could go down the aisles and pick them up like in the first 10 minutes, and then we could pick random questions out of a hat or something, because our thing says audience participation. And and you said credited, which means one of the DMRs after Gen Con is just going to be us reading a list of names of people that showed up for the seminar.
Well, only I thought Sam
would just transcribe them into the notes, the show notes. I mean,
maybe we'll make Mike Shea do that. He said he'd write show notes.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody already has to sign in so we can get their name. So there's, you know, it wouldn't be that much harder to get them to write a question with it, as long as it's legible. I will seriously make fun of people if I can't read their questions, though.
Yeah.
I'll put that right on the forum. If this is illegible, Thaddeus will read it as though he's speaking in tongues and make fun of people.
I will make a question up out of what you've written down here. and there's also some other stuff that's going to happen at the panel that's going to be
that we're not going to talk about on the air because we don't want them to know.
No, that you guys won't even know about till it happens. I've got Derek Gruder and I have been working on some surprises. So
oh no,
explain who Derek Gruder is again.
Derek Gruder, he was on an episode, four episodes ago? I don't remember. How long have I been gone?
That's right. Okay. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
4 or 5 episodes ago. He works for Gen Con.
Okay.
Yeah. So. So, yeah.
That's why he gave us a 100-person room.
Yeah, he knew we were going to have a good time. We bribed him, too, when I was in town.
That and the Mortal Kombat. Although I beat him both times. I think I beat him when I played against him.
Mortal Kombat. So,
that was so much fun.
So we're going to be at Gen Con. We're going to be having a good time. I am not signing up for any registered activities. I'm just going to try to crash stuff and meet people and pick up games. I'm going to walk around with a DM kit and try to do pickup games. So.
Sweet.
Mm. Sweet.
I'm not actually registered for any game events. I might attend a couple of seminars. I really enjoyed the writing seminars and things that they did last time I went. And so I might do a couple of those, but, I want to do pickup games and of course we've got the round table seminar. I might pop in on my wife. I'll, throw a moment to, pimp. She's doing a couple spa events. She's doing actually 3 spa events, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, where you can actually make a felted creature.
I'm guessing the Wizards of the Coast new product seminar is probably already booked up.
I don't know. I got a ticket for it already.
Yeah, I haven't looked. So, but
yeah, I'm going to the new product preview, and then I'm going to go to the open sources seminar put on by the Eclipse Phase guys on Friday, and then I am attending a writing seminar on Sunday, and I'm hosting 3 evented games that sold out within like the first 10 minutes, as most games did. And then I'm running a couple of unscheduled games. So,
when is the new product?
It is Friday at 9 a.m. Saturday at 10 a.m.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay. I will probably still be hungover at that point.
Probably.
Is there a time when you won't be hungover?
Yeah, well, that's...
What time do I get there? Well, there's drunk and then there's hungover. Like, there's that window.
Right.
Hey, nerds.
Hey, nerds.
Oh, crap.
Hey.
Hello.
Who left the door open?
Oh, my God.
What's going on here?
I saw this tweet about you doing some podcasting with Matt James.
Yep, I'm all done with that.
Yeah, and then you come on here.
Yep. Yeah, it's like whatever.
Oh, so wait, so Matt James was more important than us?
Yeah, no, this is the show I come on to when I want to eat crumb cake.
Oh, nice.
Weren't you eating crackers the last time?
Yeah, I was beginning this. At least you guys have talked before I was eating crackers. That time I started by eating crackers.
Are you also have a big thing of milk next to you? Is that what you're?
I have a refreshing chilled Diet Sierra Mist.
Oh, Nice.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to do like a Got Milk commercial, like, you know, who killed President Hamilton, and then you'd have a mouthful of pound cake and you wouldn't have any milk.
No, no.
That was pretty obscure there, Sam. Alexander Hamilton? What the hell?
You guys never saw that commercial?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Got Milk commercial?
Yeah.
Jesus.
Guess I never saw that one.
Huh. It's a historian sitting in his library, and it sort of shows he's got, like, the bust of Hamilton and all these
different history books. I'm asleep
already, Sam. Are you? Yeah, okay, whatever.
I'm kidding.
I'm sorry, were you talking?
Yeah. No.
Someone's going to have to go find that on YouTube now and link him to it so he can see it. I'm sure it's
out.
It's
awesome. Dude, that brownie made me so hungry once watching that commercial. I actually went and baked a bunch of brownies because...
Really?
Oh yeah. I'm a consumer whore like that. I see something on a commercial, I just have to go do it. I still can't find the new product seminar, so I guess I'm not going.
Do you want me to look it up for you?
No, I just can't find it, so I'll say screw it.
Here, I'll give you a link to the page. Hold on.
See, now hi, Jonathan.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
It's going well. I wasn't referring to you as a nerd when I came on saying nerd.
Oh, whatever.
Oh. Don't feel bad. I
leave
wave
him
my
out.
Yeah.
So I don't know him well enough to shout at him.
Well, Mike.
Sir.
We were just discussing the roundtable seminar we're going to be doing at Gen Con.
Awesome. I love podcasts where you talk about podcasts.
Yeah.
That's right.
It's a good time. And we were discussing our tentative schedules. I know everybody wants to hear about that.
Yeah, Mike, that's real. That makes for great radio.
So what was it you were doing?
Podcast about a podcast. It is a
podcast about a seminar about podcasts.
An entertainment event.
Speaking of podcasts about podcasts, what were you doing with Matt James?
So I'm trying to do these 1 hour talks with just one on one about a particular topic. So I did a couple with Dave Chalker, and the one I did with Matt James was on the warts of 4E, or 4E power creep over the past 3 years, and how to deal with it and what you should do. It was kind of based off the Robert Schwab article called Stuck in the Middle, where he talked about how broken combinations were wrecking his games and how do you deal with them and stuff like that. So we talked for an hour about that.
Oh, Mike, I totally want to do a show about terrain with you, man.
I'd do that. Yeah, you're on.
Yeah, let's get it. Let's get it going.
Done.
Yeah.
Let me write that down. I'm writing it down right now.
Wait.
Terrain.
So you started, I didn't know you started your own podcast. I was really sick for a while, and it's not.
No, so Critical Hits has a podcast, and it kind of goes through spurts and you know, there'll be a couple and then there won't be any. And like every so often we'll record like a session at a convention or something like that. So when they talked at PAX East, I recorded it off my crappy iPhone. And then we put it up there. We did a talk at Syndicon here about getting published in gaming, and I recorded that, and we put that up on there. So I'm kind of – it's a convenient place to put, like – because I don't want to start a podcast. I don't want to do some kind of regular thing because I've got enough.
He just wants to piggyback on everybody else's podcasts.
Yeah, I want like all of the fun of being doing podcasting without any of the real work. but this one I love the recording, and I mix it in GarageBand, which I get a little bit better every time, and then I send it off to Dave, and then Dave puts it on the Critical Hits podcast, and we're done. So works well for everybody, I think.
Cool.
Do you guys ever listen to the podcast that Dan Benjamin does on 5x5?
Yes.
So, you know, I love those podcasts. He does these one-on-one podcasts where it's just him and one other guest, and they talk about stuff, and it just, they're really like, you know, there's not a big intro. There's not a bunch of fanfare. There's no ads. It's really clean.
That sounds really familiar.
It does have ads. Yeah. I mean, like, I really wanted to be on this one because it reminded me of This Week in Tech with Laporte. And I like that one. I wanted to do this other one with the one-on-ones because it sounds like Dan Benjamin. I think they both are very interesting to do.
I have to go baste my meat right now. I'll be back.
Oh, hey-o.
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow.
Wow.
Heavy in the euphemisms here today.
Way to take the DMR into the gutter tonight, Tracy.
High five to Fred.
Yeah.
Woo.
Mike gets the reference. You guys can just go to hell.
Awesome. We'll see you back.
Are you the Dvorak? Yeah.
Yes.
I want to be Dvorak.
Apple sucks.
And this was the guy. This was the guy who was calling us nerds just a few minutes ago.
Nerds. Yeah, I know.
Tracy, put the paper in front of your cam when you get up to go. Like, do what?
That's great.
I don't know what you guys are talking about, Gen Con. I have a new philosophy that I'm trying to put in place, which is I schedule myself for very little. And then at the most fun I've had ever in Gen Con are unscheduled events. So I'm going to give myself the most amount of free time to just wander about and fall into games with people that I love and not try to do too much.
Run games for me again?
I'd be happy to. Are you blowing off your demand for a epic tier game that you were going to run for us?
I've run epic tier?
I thought you were running an epic tier game.
Can I say something?
I be in that? I'm signing up for that right now. I went in.
I'll find some way to run, but it's got to be really short.
Hammer it out.
Yeah, epic tier, really short. That sounds good.
It means one quarter of a fight.
Well, just let someone crit and, you know.
Yeah, right. Actually, I've seen some pretty quick epic tier battles.
Well, a game does not necessarily mean combat. I could totally run an epic tier non-combat game.
Boring.
You would love that.
Skill challenge.
No dungeons either. No dungeons for you.
It all ends with the PCs killing themselves after 20 minutes of no combat.
I kill myself.
Not a single terrain piece in sight, Mike. Not a single terrain piece in sight.
I will. Don't worry. I'll make interesting ways for you guys to die. It's fine.
You should see me when I play at like LFR games, and I'm just like, you know, lying back in my chair, staring up at the ceiling, you know, imagining anything other than whatever game world I'm supposed to be playing in while I wait for the next battle to start. Because I am so bad. I'm like, I don't know. Why am I here? Is that a goblin? Can I hit it? You know, I'm the worst. I'm the worst kind of player like that. I claim it's because I pour all of my creative energy into the games that I run, but I don't know if that's true. I think that's just the type of player I am. I like the combat. But that's
it's hard because I believe your wife said she also wants to play in another Hooters game.
Sure.
Man, I thought we were going to do Epic Tier Hooters. I want to do that.
Epic Hooters.
It's
a great event.
Randall, whether we get invited or not, you and I will be there.
We're crashing at you. Yeah. Absolutely. Listen, you can't. Yeah.
Out of anywhere we don't want to be. That's the theme for Gen Con.
I had a couple of highlights the last Gen Con, but playing in the Hooters game was absolutely awesome. And I just, there's something about like the constraint of like, Tracy, I love this adventure, but you have to tell me the five main scenes. Like, because I gotta learn this entire adventure in 2.5 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, I just kind of love having to run that way. And I had, you know, I had, players were awesome.
Yeah.
You know, it was such a blast. You know, Chris Sims was just staring at me the whole time. And I couldn't tell, like, he's like, this is the worst dungeon master I have ever seen. You know, I didn't know what was going through his mind.
No.
It was great.
Yeah.
Went the opposite way, and I scheduled the hell out of myself because if I didn't, I wouldn't run any games. So it's a challenge to myself to run to run these games in public. So
yeah.
I figure, so, you know, next year I'll do the non-schedule thing. So
I mean, really, yeah. Well, it really depends on what you like to do.
I can't sign up for stuff anyway for some reason. It keeps telling me that I don't have a badge for when event starts.
Did you sign in?
Yeah, I'm signed in. It says Thaddeus Cooper does not have a badge for when event starts, or their badge does not provide them access to it.
Did you get a press badge and not a regular badge?
Yeah, I have a press badge, so I can't get into stuff.
You probably have to buy a regular badge first.
Well, what's the point of a press badge if I can't go to a new product seminar?
Badge gets you into press-specific events, not to... Because I have a press badge, too, but I have a regular badge.
Wait, you know Derek. Just ask him.
Wait. Yeah, just tell him.
Thaddeus, you're on the Origin site. You're not on the... No.
Yeah. All right, either way.
You should be able to go to an event, click like that link that I put in there in the window. You should be able to go to that and do add ticket to cart.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. And it says my badge doesn't... Yeah.
So apparently a press badge then does not allow you access to paid events, although the product seminar is a free event. But I don't know. That's weird. I used my regular badge. I did not use my press badge, so I do not know.
Aye.
So, Jonathan, have you been to Gen Con
tonight? What's that?
Have you been to Gen Con?
This is going to be my first Gen Con ever.
Oh, you're going to be there?
Yes, I will be there.
Okay, you have to see me.
Yeah, and I am not scheduling myself for anything because at DDXP I overscheduled myself, and I said I'm just going to go to Gen Con and crash games as I can.
There's one. I don't know. Excuse me. Oh, pardon me. That's professional. If if there's one thing that you can sign up for, and it's kind of hard to get into, but if you can get into the True Dungeon, the True Dungeon is worth going to. The longer 2 hour True Dungeon is always worth seeing. It's kind of the fun Gen Con thing you can't do anywhere else.
I'll have to check that out.
But it's hard to get into, and it's expensive too. I don't remember how much it costs. I think it's like $36 or $40 or something.
I'm good friends with Adam Jury, and I lived right by him in Canada. And when I left 2 years ago, I said, "You'll see me at Gen Con in 2 years." And that's the only thing I have for sure I'm going to do is meet up with Adam again. So.
He's going to go, "Hey, Adam, what's going on? You saw me. See you later."
He's a great guy. I really like Adam. So.
Yeah, I really want to meet him. I hope I get to meet him at Gen Con.
Mm-hmm. So what else you guys talk about tonight?
Nothing.
Newbies.
Newbies.
Making the game accessible to newer players.
Oh, yeah, that was a Twitter topic, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yeah. So. But
Do you guys solve that problem?
I think we determined that there's really multiple solutions to the problem.
Mm. That is wrong.
Apparently, I'm always wrong.
Was one of them World of Warcraft?
Interesting enough, Thaddeus' idea was World of Warcraft. So, no, I'm just kidding. You must go and kill 4 wolves and bring their pelts to me.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Killed the 4 wolves because you were just exploring, it doesn't count. Start from
Correct.
Zero. Because you don't have the quest yet.
You didn't think to pick up their pelts.
That's right.
Think that, like,
even if you're carrying the dead wolves around, it's too late.
Do you think that games like Wrath of Ashardalon are a good gateway drug into D&D?
I think so. I actually think a better one is... crap. I hate it when my mind goes blank like that.
I think Munchkin is the best gateway drug to D&D myself.
Not Labyrinth. That's not it.
That's got that one chick, the villain, that one
that's
chick.
Right,
that's really scary. What was her name?
The David villain? Bowie.
Yeah, David she's Bowie. Scary. She scares her.
Yeah.
She scares totally the hot. Crap out of me.
What is the name of that game? Oh, Talisman. Talisman is the name of the game.
Sure, right. We
Talisman
have Talisman.
Is an awesome gateway drug game for D&D. Yeah. You even have little characters.
Isn't it PvP, or it's got PvP at a certain point?
A little. It has, like, PvP elements, but not direct. I mean, it's only, like, if you land on a character's space, I think. But since it's all random die roll, I mean, you roll it to, like, what, 2d6 or something to move around the board? So it's not direct PvP. In other words, you can't deliberately attack someone just for the heck of it. But, I mean, it's a board game, but it has all these elements of an RPG, like a character sheet and money. You keep track of resources and things like that. So, you know, it's really I love Talisman. I played a lot of it in high school.
We had my 8-year-old niece over, and we played a game of Ashardalon with her. And she's like, like every kid, she's like totally ADD. And she was totally into it. She wanted to be the dwarf, and she was real excited, and she followed the rules, and she loved rolling dice. And, you know, she couldn't be as far from a D&D player as as one can imagine, but she was totally into it. So I think, you know, for kids in particular, I think it's there's a real advantage because they have a stronger imagination. We're so jaded and we've played every game on Earth. So it's like, there's no story we haven't heard.
I think kids who are kind of able to immediately visualize and they get like, oh, that's a dwarf. I know what that's like. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
I'm short too.
Yeah. Tracy, I see you talking about like how to make Pathfinder and stuff like that more accessible.
I try sometimes.
Did I miss that?
I try a little bit.
Has anybody uncovered your interest in Pathfinder all of a sudden?
Yeah, some people wonder.
What are they saying?
Whoa, Tracy, not too much information all at once, please.
Hypothesize. What are they saying?
People are wondering why.
My guess is she's been tapped by Paizo to do a project, so she's got to be interested in it, but she can't talk about it yet.
My guess would be if you guys would fucking shut up and let her talk, she might tell you.
But that's not as fun. That's nowhere close to
I'm not currently under contract or under NDA with Paizo. I can say that. I have some potential writing opportunities if I learn the Pathfinder stuff, for one. Two, I always like learning new games, and Pathfinder's a good one to know. And three, I actually like reading I was told pretty early that reading Pathfinder Adventures would be a good thing, because they're just so well written. And like I was saying earlier, I had said earlier that the one I had read recently, to be honest, I could pull most of it in the 4E other than the monsters, but, you know, the NPCs and stuff were just great.
Right. Are you finding that are they more well-written than what we get typically out of WotC?
I think they're... It's hard to tell.
Wow, way to hedge that answer. That's awesome.
So it's just different. They're more detailed. They get very, very... I read the core rulebook and this adventure path. In the adventure path, you know, they'll talk about what the weather is like there and that it rains between these hours, these like particular hours. And that's not necessarily better, but for some people it is, because they want that sort of detail. And this particular one is more of a sandbox adventure, which we don't get very often from Wizards of the Coast adventures.
Right.
And hey, some from people what I. Go ahead.
No, keep going. No.
I was just gonna say they give you hints on how they give you direction on how to change the island you're on as the players go through, and the NPCs they give, they also like there's this whole both morale and attitude like axes of how the NPCs interact with the PCs. So you know if they are friendly to the PCs, they'll act one way. If they're hostile, they'll act different. And then there's also their morale, which would judge how likely they're to run away and say, oh shit, I did not sign up for this when I confronted with a monster and things like that.
See, yeah, from what I've heard, and I haven't actually read any, so this is all just hearsay, but I've heard that Paizo does a really good job of making it feel more like a living world,
right,
and less like just a railroad adventure.
They do. I've been following the AP's Adventure Pass since about the second one, and one of the biggest differences I see personally is there's a lot more sandboxy things like Tracy was talking about, but there's also a lot more character that they add in. There's a lot of canned text, a tremendous amount of canned text from the NPCs. And Tracy was mentioning kind of a favor reputation type thing. They often branch that out where actions the PCs can take can have negative or positive favor points that play later on in the adventure. So like Carrion Crown is the current adventure, and there's a lot of things you can do that really will piss off the locals, but you may not know it until two or three encounters down the road. So it's interesting.
I actually I won the whole Kingmaker Adventure Path. It's all six books a few months ago, and I've been reading through, and I agree with everything you guys just said. I was really impressed, and I had been hearing good stuff about the Adventure Paths and different things for a long time, and I just never, because I don't play Pathfinder, I didn't ever want to spend the money on purchasing something just to see if it's, you know, everything everybody talked about. And I happened to win the set, and it's really impressive. It's actually made me try to kind of look at Pathfinder and think about Pathfinder a little differently from just completely staying away from it. So that says something.
Yeah.
Guys, what's the one where you start off as in a caravan, and you go and take care of some gnolls, and it's kind of in a desert area?
Legacy of Fire, I think.
Mm-hmm. Is that okay? I'm actually playing in that in a virtual campaign, which we're kind of on hiatus, but it's actually a 4E game, but we're playing mm-hmm. that adventure path.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So yeah, it's interesting.
They also do a really good job of adding a lot of extra value into each adventure path book you hook up mm-hmm. or you pick up, because almost all of them have at least 2 to 3 or 4 monsters that are brand new and unique to that that book. And there's often magic items, abilities, skills, whatnot. So you're not just buying an adventure; you're actually buying a very, like, you know, these monsters are unique to this area that the adventure path is taking place in, and it really builds that world, like you were mentioning earlier.
How yeah. easy is it to convert them to 4E?
I would say extremely.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of the rules that, other than necessarily just monsters, and monsters are pretty easy for me to convert and probably for you too. The other stuff I think would work pretty well on its own. You just would have to say, oh, this skill is really this other one. And that's about it. I saw huge chunks of it that I could just put in a 4E game without any real conversion. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
The one thing I would say is that, so I just happened to luck out to get the first adventure path book in this particular 1 of 6 group. So people should know that there are multiple ones within that group, and
yeah.
you can tell on the spine, it's not on the front cover. I'm writing about this in a post too. And they can be a little pricey. I think they're worth it, but, and the further along you get in the Adventure Path series, I think it seems, from my understanding from having talked to people, they got a little upset that I said this the first time, is that running those Adventure Paths becomes a little more complex, I think. Or Adventure Paths in general are a little more complex than normal adventures. But on top of it, my understanding is that they can get more difficult as you progress in the numbers. So I wouldn't necessarily recommend this one for a brand new DM, because, like I said, trying to keep track of an NPC's attitude and morale, can, on top of what the weather is like between the hours of 10 and 2 or whatever, like that can start getting a little overwhelming. I think for somebody who's really new to DMing and hasn't figured out how to organize their information yet.
So it really is. An investment, like the adventure paths are an investment. You know, this Kingmaker path, as I read through it, it's like, if I'm going to have, if I were to start playing Pathfinder, or if I were to convert this to 4E, that's a heavy duty investment to run the group through all 6 books of this adventure path. I mean, Tracy's right. They're pricey. The quality is good. They're worth it, but it's a real investment, not just in money, in time. So yeah. And the thing is, they're constructed, at least this one is constructed, such that when you're running them through it, they gain buy-in as you go. I mean, it's not written so that, you could just run one of the books and then sort of trail off and do something else, but that's not really what they're made for. They really are made to be a true campaign that you're running
through. It sounds to me like they're on par with like the old Dragonlance, all 12 modules of the Dragonlance series that came out. Mm-hmm. They're that involved, and they have that much story and things like that.
Well, it sounds like DM could also gain a lot just by reading through these. You know, it sounds like you could learn a lot about how to build campaigns and kind of structure gameplay for your parties just by reading through some of them.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, I know a fair number of people follow me and they sometimes buy stuff that I talk about, and I want to be completely honest about it. I'm not putting it down at all, but it was $20 for the one adventure path, and there's 6 in the entire path. So
yeah, and Paizo's really weird about that. I like one thing they do, and I don't like one thing they do. I like the fact that they have an ongoing subscription that you can purchase, where they'll send you each adventure path each month. And you can cancel at any time. And they give you a 30% discount on that, and you get a free PDF copy of Adventure Path. Mm-hmm. And that's really nice. The one thing I don't like is they don't bundle any of the older Adventure Paths at all, either with themselves or with PDFs. So everything is individualized once it's already been released. So if you want to go back and say pick up the whole Legacy of Fire adventure path that Randall was talking about, you've got to buy each one individually, and there's no discount available, and that's a little frustrating. But
yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And the other part is like, so the other alternative, from my understanding from talking to some people online, I forget their names right now, is that you could do the Pathfinder Society adventures, which are meant to run, I think it was about 4 hours. But they're PDF only, and they're $4 each. And I couldn't, I looked quickly, you know, maybe somebody can point me to somewhere where you could, you know, at least see one for free. So the way I picked up mine is I went to a local gaming store and I wanted to flip through it first because, you know, $20 for an adventure path, I want to look at it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to just buy it without seeing it. And even $4, I know like one $4 purchase isn't that huge of an investment, but I've already bought like all this other stuff.
Yeah.
So $4 is it's kind of like one of those. I wish it was just that slightly bit cheaper, or I could see a free one to see what it was like first. Sorry.
No, it's all right. It's interesting. I don't know much about it other than be, like I said, I'm a player in a game that is being converted to 4E right. from one of those adventure paths. So I don't know much about Pathfinder at all. I've never bought the main book. $50 or whatever it was just a little much when I was already investing in D&D, so it was just like, mm-hmm. yeah. So, but I've heard good things about it, you know, so I'm not going to judge it as being good or bad or whatever. I think they ran with an opportunity that they had, and they've done pretty well for themselves, so it's a great way to go.
One product I will recommend to you guys as DMs that you really need to at least flip through in a gaming store, if not purchase, is their most recent hardback, the Intersea World Guide. So far this year, that is my most valuable and favorite RPG purchase. And I buy for a lot of systems. I don't buy just for D&D. I'm also, a lot of people don't know this, but I'm actually a really big Call of Cthulhu player, and I'm pretty active in that scene too. But the Intersea World Guide has surpassed anything I've purchased this year. That book is massive amounts of crunch. And talking with Chris Sims at DDXP, he kind of referenced it and said, yeah, you really need to get this. You need to pick it up. And he kind of nudged on hint. He couldn't talk about it much. And when it came out on Twitter, he was really pushing me too. And so I went and bought it, and it just blown me away. That is one of those comprehensive world guides I've ever seen in an RPG, period.
Wow.
I started playing D&D in 81. So I'm 40 years old. I've been around for a while. And this book is just really – I'm looking at the World of Greyhawk book on my box on my shelf thinking, yeah, it's better than you.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's an endorsement because, I mean, I'm right – Sam and I are right there with you, mm-hmm. Jonathan. I mean, I'm 40 – I'll be 45 this year. Sam, I don't know about yourself, but you've said. But
38. But, you know, my World of Greyhawk box just sighed. Jonathan, yeah. It heard you, and it just went, oh, God.
Well – The Intersea World Guide, like when I opened it up, the first thing that blew me away is they've got a full fold-out map of Galarian, and that alone just kind of made my old grognard so I go, oh my god, I love this. But they break down all of the states and areas of Galarian, the continent, and they do this in 2 to 3 page blurbs, which seems really small, but then when you read about what they put in these blurbs, they've packed a tremendous amount of information in. So if you ever want to write a campaign on a world, it doesn't have to be Pathfinder. I think this would be a really good world to put a campaign for any system into, because they cover every possible thing you can talk about. The government type, the ruling, the languages, the religion, notable cities, things like that. It's really amazing book. So
it's a little pricey.
It is. Yeah, it is.
Actually, the PDF is very reasonable. The PDF is $10, but the hardcover is $50.
Yeah, Paizo did that with all their PDFs. They're selling pretty much every hardcover PDF right now for $10. So the core rulebook, Game Master Guide, all that stuff is $10. So
and it makes sense. Pick up finally. The PDF of the core rulebook. That might mm-hmm. be worth it. Yeah,
I did that. I bought all PDFs because I can't right now afford to put that much investment in another system that, you know, my group may never play that in any sort of regular game.
Yeah, I think a lot of us are in that boat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I love having the PDFs available. And, you know, it's interesting because my group won't play published adventures really. Like, they don't really like it. So that's why I'm very picky. That's why the price seems a lot to me, but maybe for other people it wouldn't be a problem at all.
Your group won't play published adventures?
No, they don't like published adventures. They like to be able to drive the narrative and the plot and everything. So.
Yeah, I can also recommend the game, because I don't play Pathfinder either, but I picked up the Game Mastery Guide, and it is a really great book of advice for how to deal with different situations in a game. If you're, you know, it's a giant tome, okay? So it's huge and thick, and it has a ton of information in it. But, you know, just picking it up and leafing through it, you can tell that it's really well written and well presented. And for any GM who wants to run a game, it's system neutral. I mean, the game, it's a book for Pathfinder, of course, but much of the information is just system neutral. It's just advice about, you know, how do you deal with different stuff, and it's very well done.
Yeah, Enrique did a big post about what an awesome tool it is for any DM or any GM in any game. Just the tools that you can pull from it.
There's so much stuff in that book too that are things that GMs talk about, like on Twitter and forums or whatnot. Like, there's two pages of terms every DM should know.
Yeah,
and there's a list of recommended music, recommended movies, recommended books to watch to get inspiration from, and just all these cool little things that we talk about, but you don't usually see in published books.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like it harkens back to the original Dungeon Master, Advanced Dungeons and Dragons Dungeon Master's Guide.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
I mean, he had all that kind of esoteric information in the back in appendices, you know.
Yeah.
So,
except the sentences are, sorry, Gary, more well structured than what Gygax wrote.
I like Gygax for what he did, but I'm not a big fan boy. So, you know, like this.
Well, what's funny?
I've played a lot of the guy's games, and I've never read any of the guy's novels.
Here's the thing: if you read the first, I haven't read his like how to GM role-playing. He's got these books that I never read those. But if you read the 1E Player's Handbook, it's a great read. It's a great, like, here's what characters do in this game. It's not just like, here's a fighter, here's what you can do, but it's like, here's how to explore, here's how to, you know, set your mind to going to explore in this world that your DM is creating. But the Dungeon Master's Guide is like, I'm so busy telling you the rules of the game that I'm not being very clear about a lot of the rules of the game. So it's,
well, and it's put together in a chain of thought consciousness manner. Yeah. I mean, it's like one topic to the next. There's no grouping or order not really anyway. And it's just, it's a mess. But I mean,
well, like, yeah, that's just like I was saying, I love him for his games, but not for his writing.
I tried to start Gord the Rogue. That was one of his, and I couldn't get very far. Yeah.
Yeah.
We love you, Gary, but yeah.
So what's
sorry.
Up?
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to swing the topic. So if you had something else
gonna,
you wanted to say.
I was going to swing as well. Have any of you guys seen the Gloomrot? The Gloomrot game, the Gloomrot box set yet?
Nope. No. Don't know what that is.
It's the Shadowfell box set.
Yeah, new Shadowfell box set for DMs coming out. It's coming out in a couple weeks, but I think there's a couple preview copies that have been floating around.
Yeah, I'd like to have one.
None came my direction. Sorry. And I got to say, and I've been sitting on it for a little while, but I'm about to publish it. I just wrote a review about the Shadowfell. Here's the Shadowfell stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And if Gloomrot is half as disappointing as the Heroes of the Shadow is, then I'm going to be pretty upset for a while to come.
Bartonius wrote, Danny, on Critical Hits, Bartonius wrote a review of the Gloomrot box, right? It was a very encouraging review. I'm looking forward to it. So
the previews that WotC have been putting out look really good. Did you not like Heroes of Shadow?
No, I didn't. I did not.
Because half as bad as it would actually make it better, wouldn't it?
Yeah. I feel like they had the opportunity to introduce a really fun optional power source that, I think it could have been better than Psionics the way that they have done it for 4th edition.
So you're expecting a new kind of mechanic?
I was expecting at least a new power source, something along the lines of, you know, what they had used to power their original assassin.
I thought Shadow was the power source.
Yeah, but they basically just took a bunch of classes that already exist, like the Paladin and the Fighter and that kind of stuff, and then made them, and the Warlock, and made them kind of with it. So it's like, okay, you've got a Warlock. We already kind of know how that works. They tap into, you know, they form packs with stuff, or you've got a Paladin. We know how his power source works. And they just took classes that were already there, and they're like, okay, we're just going to they reflavored classes. It was an entire book of reflavored classes and new races that were almost very, very, seemed very similar, very identical. And then the vampire that I was really looking forward to is just trash. I mean, the fact that the vampire has to rely on the rest of the party for healing surges makes it more of a drain on the party than any kind of an asset. And so there's a lot I think they dropped the ball on in that book. I mean, it's still a good book. There's still some useful stuff in it. I, you know, there's stuff I'll play with, but I really feel like they had all this time to get it ready, and they really could have made it something that was fun to add to the game. And really all they did was gave me reflavored classes that we already had. Wow. Nothing really new. So,
When's this getting published?
Probably this week.
Okay, because I hadn't gone into the site to sneak preview that. So
yeah, I'll have to read that. I think in the last 2 years, that was the book I was most excited, and Gloomrot is the product that the box set that I'm most excited about that they've released, and I was really expecting some really awesome stuff because the Shadowfell has been that setting, and the things that come out of the Shadowfell have been the setting that I have been most interested in. You know, my main character that I've played, if I ever play in a game, is Shardukai Avenger. You know, I really like stuff that's tied to that Shadowfell, and when this Heroes of Shadow book came out, I feel like they didn't have enough time to work on it, so they're like, okay, well, we'll just take what we already have and we'll kind of make it dark. Okay, here's a Dark Paladin. Okay, what else do we got? Oh, here's a Dark Warlock. Okay, yeah, that's good. Okay, here we go. All right, and we'll take like this fighter and kind of make him like half fighter, half rogue, and call him an assassin, and there you go. And so I feel like it was kind of crapped between two pages and put it on a shelf. Okay, that's where I sit.
I know that when you're looking forward to some particular aspect of the game and you don't feel like they get it right, the disappointment is always enhanced. So
yeah, and I kind of write that into my review that I was really, really looking forward to this. I was sitting on my hands waiting for it, and then it wasn't where I thought or was hoping it would go. So
yeah. I'll probably pick it up because I play an assassin, but yeah.
Yeah, I had kind of a different. I mean, I think that the idea that here's a new Book of Shadow, and much like they did with PHB3, they introduced an entirely new mechanism built around a power source with the whole PowerPoint system. That there could have been a shadow system that acted very similar with shrouding, shrouds and stuff like that. I didn't even think about that till you just mentioned it. And I like the book, and now I heard your review, and now I hate it. So thank you.
I still like it.
You owe me $20.
I don't want to turn people off. That's my fear of writing. Like, I've always written good reviews up until now, and I've always sat on reviews that I thought were bad.
Speak your mind.
It's the difference between I don't want to turn people's opinion. Like, if you enjoy it, I want you to enjoy it. But I also kind of want people to know, like, I was really hoping to enjoy it more, and I don't now, and I want to explain why.
So. I mean, you can certainly approach it from, and if you haven't written it like this already, you might think about writing it in this way, and that's to say, to open people's eyes and say, look, I'm not saying this is a bad book, but here are the things you may want to consider. Right. If you're feeling like I did that X, Y, Z, then maybe...
If you're picking this book up because you're looking for a new shadow power source, you're not getting it.
Well, yeah, and that's perfectly fair. I think that's an honest review.
Yeah, I feel like the I'm a terrible judge of the enjoyment of player books, so I won't know until my players actually use it and try it out. And we're going to be running a Shadowfell campaign starting in June for a couple of months, and the Heroes of Shadow is going to be the primary character book.
Can I telecommute for that?
No. Sorry. So they're going to use it, and they're pretty excited about it. I mean, so first of all, my wife is playing an assassin that is in it, and her favorite thing is they finally move the assassin into the character builder. And she likes it a lot better than the Shroudy assassin.
Oh, does she?
Because, I mean, oh, you don't? Oh, she said she doesn't. I thought she did.
Oh.
Well, it does a lot more damage.
you know, that, oh yeah, I guess she doesn't like the fact that it's all focused on poison, and that really limits undead. It limits when you fight undead. But it definitely does, you know, quite a bit. I mean, when you're matching other essentials characters, the problem that she had with the Shroud one was that it had kind of cool mechanics to it, but it didn't stand up nearly to the amount of damage output that another striker, as an essential striker, would do. So she's watching thieves and slayers just pouring out 35, 40 damage around, and she's doing like 10. So,
well, she and I should talk about how she's building her assassins. And
yeah, it could be. I mean, it could be complicated. But the thing I noticed about the book was that, I mean, everybody was like, there was a big controversy over whether this book was a quote unquote essentials book or not. And I kind of didn't get involved until I read it. And my thought was, well, it kind of tried to dance between the two, because it said like, well, here are some character classes that are similar to the style that the essentials character classes, where the Blackguard is built, you know, it's a paladin-y type. I think it was a paladin-y type. But it's still kind of its own class, right? And they had those, and then they had stuff that could work with essentials, other essentials builds, like what they did with the Warlock and the other power sources. And then they had, like, here's a bunch of, you know, here's a 2-page spread of powers that any wizard can use, regardless of which book you had. So I thought they were trying to be careful to dance between both worlds and not just say, okay, well, the book that we're putting out now is going to focus on essential stuff because that's what we're into. You know, they wanted to kind of say, well, you know, it's not just for essentials people. It's also, if you like the other stuff, you can use it too.
Well, it says,
I don't know if it did justice to either.
Well, here's the thing is that it's not a player's handbook. It's not a PHB4. It's a player's option because it's meant to be a stepping stone in between the Heroes of the Fallen Lands, et cetera, essentials products and the regular sort of classic 4E, because it even says right on the back, Player's Options, Heroes of Shadow is aimed at players who are ready to reach beyond the essentials books of the Fallen Lands and Forgotten Kingdoms. In addition to exploring the nature of the Shadow Power Source, role-playing game supplement presents races, classes, blah, blah, blah. And then it says, for use with these Dungeons & Dragons essentials products. So, and it lists the two essentials PHBs and the rules compendium. So it's meant to be the next step.
It says on the back, blah, 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 blah. Use of the Shadow's power source. At the same time, the Shadow power source isn't anything special. It's not a mechanic or anything new. Like that's what I was thinking, because everything that was a power source before this, you know, divine power source, all that kind of stuff, like it had its own classes that went with it. You know, a divine power source has paladins, clerics, you know, Arcane has bards, it has wizards, it has sorcerers. Like, every power source had its classes attached to it. And then, so I figured, okay, this is going to be the Shadow power source. So it's going to have assassins, and they're going to be, like, necromancers, and they're going to be just, like, all kinds of weird stuff that that we haven't seen yet. And instead what they did was they're like, okay, we'll take paladin, and we'll show what happens when a paladin gets mixed up with a power source. Or let's see what a warlock does in the Shadow power. Like, it didn't... There's nothing that's intrinsically, aside from Assassin, there's nothing that's intrinsically Shadow. So
I don't think they want to add that many more classes is part of it. I don't think they want to add separate classes for a lot of stuff. They're trying to cut that down. So I wouldn't have added that many. I know they added, I think, one, didn't they? The vampire thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess to me, like, the Blackguard is not anything like a paladin.
Yeah.
You know, they call it a paladin build, but it's not like just a paladin with some minor things. It's a striker. I mean, there's never been a paladin striker before.
Oh, that's not true at all.
What paladin striker exists?
Anyone can make a paladin into a striker. I've got a guy who I play with on Tuesdays whose paladin hits harder than
So there's 7,700 powers, so you can turn anything into anything. But right. when you talk about a specific build type, I mean, you know, the core fundamental thing of a paladin is marking, and the core fundamental of a blackguard is heavy damage and counter powers. So, it's a lot more like an Avenger than it is like a paladin, if you ask me. So I think the blackguard is its own class, you know, not just kind of like a tweak to a paladin, really. I think it's true that the mechanics aren't really that much different than anything else. But I'm not sure that the mechanics between Arcane and Divine are really that different either. I mean, there's no mechanical difference between the two.
Mm-hmm.
See, guys.
Well, no.
Me...
I mean,
oh, go ahead.
And I started out using mechanics, but then I kind of twisted and did a little acrobatics there to land on. Really, it's more about I guess the iconics of the class is what was important to me. You know, every power source has that group of iconic classes that goes along with it. Psionics has their group, you know, and then you get to Shadow and it's just kind of like, we don't want to do that. So we'll just kind of blend everything into Shadow and say, I feel like it was lazy. I really feel like that's the bottom line for me is they didn't want to. Okay. So you don't want to add more classes. But that's, you know, that's what some of us want. And that's what some of us were expecting. So there's a little disappointment there. I'm still not saying it's not a bad product. I'm just saying I'm not happy with it because I wanted something different.
Yeah. Thaddeus, I agree with you on the some of the laziest points too. There, I started looking at how to take some of the stuff from Hero Shadow and apply it to non-essentials characters, and there's a couple of areas it gets really messy. I'm a big Necromancer fan, and the Necromancy school was a little fiddly trying to apply that to a non-essentials wizard, mainly because the necromancy school is so based upon the stuff in essentials with the apprentice mage and the expert mage and so on and so forth. And you can't really do that well. One of my main characters in campaign and in Canada too was a tiefling priest of the Raven Queen. And I was able to take some of the Warpriest powers for him if I wanted to. I was just playing around with it. But there's some features of the Warpriest that are in the Heroes of Shadow that are not powers. And by the letter of the rule, I can't take those because they're not a power. You know, so
I'll tell you what I tell everybody who wants a Necromancer is that if you want an arcane Necromancer, like somebody who uses black magic to reanimate stuff, just take a summoning wizard and then reskin him. You know, whatever you're summoning, you're actually using like controlled constructs or, you know, making, you know, animated dead. And if you want something that's more like a shamanistic, then I say use a swarm druid and then make, you know, the things that they summon be more give them a necromantic flavor and just stay away from, you know, unless you want to play like that essential style.
And you're right. You can do those, but I think I was kind of like you. I was disappointed that it felt like it should have been easier to do. It felt like it should have been. I could just walk into this and say, "Hey, I want to make a necromancer, but I don't want to use it on a central's character." It's not easy to do.
Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was just gonna say, I do wonder if this is where taking the class compendium out of the product schedule kind of hurt this product. That's all.
Awesome. I was going to say that it was always my impression that as Dark Sun is to regular 4E, this Heroes of Shadow book is to Essentials. That's to me. So I always assumed this was an Essentials book. That it was not necessarily, while you could use some of the elements of it in a regular 4E game, you wouldn't be able to cross-fold the characters against each other necessarily because these would be Essentials characters.
See, and that's one of those things that's upsetting for me is because then, you know, for those of us who aren't totally into essentials, one of the coolest parts of the game, which is, you know, I think Shadows has always been something that I've really, really liked to play around with in my games and wished, you know, there was hardcore mechanics for it. That gets left out of my regular game. And now if I want to broach it, you know, I have to play Essentials, which...
An Essentials character, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, and that to me, you know, not...
No, fun. That would be disappointing, you're absolutely...
You know, it's not, again, you know, my overall theme is not that it's not a good product, just that I'm disappointed, you know, with my expectations were not met.
So my favorite part of the book is on page 63. There's a William O'Connor picture of a Binding Warlock that I swear to God is Harry Dresden.
So, and I saw that.
If you get a second, take a look at page 63 and tell me that doesn't invoke the images of Harry Dresden if you know anything about the Dresden Files.
Okay,
hold on. I can almost reach the book. Hold
on. I really like the Raven Queen stuff. And I also think, and that's the basically she can help them out one time, but later calls in favors and stuff like that. And then has the mechanic of converting to a crit once per encounter monsters.
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that's Dresden. He's got a staff in one hand and a rod in the other, and he's wearing his hat.
Totally.
But the other thing that I think the hero's option, I don't think, is supposed to be between essentials and traditional or classic 4E or whatever you want to call it. I think it's just that they've gone from these huge books that are focused on a particular power source or whatnot into more story-driven books. And that's like what Heroes of the Feywild is going to be and stuff like that.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see the Feywild book that they come out with.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
But it'll be an Essentials book, guys. Mark my words.
Yeah, that's the direction they're headed. I mean,
did they have to put Arthas on the cover?
Orifice.
Arthas.
Oh, Arthas.
Lich King.
There's an orifice on the cover. What?
Well, I mean,
hey guys, I need to step away.
Yeah.
So I'm gonna say goodnight and thank you for having me on.
Thanks, Mike. Always a pleasure.
Good night, Mike Shea.
Night.
Good
night.
Mike was pretty quiet tonight.
That's because you kept talking over him.
Yeah.
I'm going to head out myself as well. I've got to get up in about 4.5 hours for work. So.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've got to go in early tomorrow. I've got some stuff to do. I got to be there at 4:30. So.
Yeah. Well, Jonathan, you need to come back and you and I will talk about Cthulhu. And these guys will all have to shut up for a while.
I would be very happy to. I'm a
good
huge
luck
Cthulhu
with that.
Fan.
And, that'd be cool. I've never played it. I'd love to play it.
Yeah, it's a great game.
If you want to get me to not shut up, just start talking Delta Green. That's the one system.
Oh, you're liking Delta Green, huh? Okay.
I've been a fan since day one. I love that system. So, anyway, it's nice to meet with you guys. And thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
Thanks for being on the show, Jonathan.
You guys have a good night.
Yep, take it easy. All right. And we've actually been recording for about 2 hours now, so.
So should we?
Really, I only count about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Oh God, let's not start. Really. So how about we go around and we say what we're working on, and then we call it a night.
That sounds great.
Okay. Thad, what are you working on, man?
Well, I've got that review coming up and some, you know, just podcasting and stuff, and that's about it, really.
And setting up cool stuff for Gen Con for the DM.
Oh, well, yeah, well, I can't talk about that stuff, though.
Well, I know you can't talk about it, but I mean,
it's going to be awesome.
It will be.
It's going to be awesome. What about you, Randall?
I am working on items for Star Frontiers. That'll be coming out this month. And I am working on, still got the live simulcast or podcast idea cooking in the background. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those things that all of it's going to come together at once, and then all of a sudden you're going to see Dead Orcs After Dark sometime at night.
So, oh, yeah. If you ever start doing that, that'd be fun to be on.
Yeah, so thinking about doing that, that's still on the back burner, but it's still cooking. What else is going on? That's about it right now. Big stuff.
Okay. Well, that's about it then. Everybody say good night.
Tracy, what are you doing?
I'm doing some freelancing for Market Waste Productions on the new Cortex Plus game. I'm writing an adventure for Postmortem Studios, the one I wrote Sickness in Springdale for. So we're going to do another one. This one will have a dungeon. So.
Ooh. And they'll pay you to write a dungeon knowing how you feel about them?
Yeah.
Wow. It's impressive.
So, it'll be good. It's a good one. He wanted one that, you know, had a story behind it. You know, he didn't want a random dungeon, which is the type of dungeon I don't like. So I don't have to write one I don't like. So, so that's always good. And then, you know, do some other stuff. We were chatting today that I should write my own, very own from scratch RPG. So we'll see how that goes.
A romantic RPG.
I saw that. No, I thought it was going to be Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys building tree houses and solving crimes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to do the detective one. You basically will start up your own little detective agency, and you'll have your own clubhouse, and yeah.
Sweet. With interesting results. With humorous results.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Those are the things I had to figure out, is, you know, how much dice rolling to put in there, and how much just to have it be storytelling. I think it could be a lot of fun.
I think you can totally take it in a wonderfully dark direction, too.
Mm-hmm.
That would be, but with kids, right? So it's like, little Timmy got eaten by Cthulhu. It's really sad. We can't talk about it because we're all mad.
I definitely, that'll be an expansion.
Oh, there you go.
You know, I need to think out the product line, you know, to keep the cash cow coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't ever write a product that's just going to dead end real quick. So what about you, Sam? What you up to?
Not a lot. I'm just running lots of games, making my Gen Con plans. About to post up my schedule online, and everybody's going to go, "You're effing nuts." And, you know, to make the official announcement for DMR, my dog Coco passed away yesterday, so no more snoring in the background.
That makes me that honestly makes me sad. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah.
It was always a good point of humor.
It was. But, you know, she had cancer, so she was suffering, and she's not suffering anymore. She's as my girlfriend Carol said, she must be up in heaven playing ball with my dad. So, you know, he's throwing the ball, and then when she comes back, he's feeding her pancakes. So, you know, that's about all that she could ask for, right?
There you go.
Yeah. Well, that's
and about
now, it.
Now that everybody's depressed, yeah, sorry,
that,
everyone.
That about brings it down a notch.
Yeah.
Everybody should definitely go. Anyone who's going to Gen Con should definitely go sign up for our live recording of the DM's Roundtable on Saturday.
Yeah.
Seats are going fast.
I will.
That's correct. There.
I'll put a link to the actual event in the show notes.
I wish we could have like a live counter for how many tickets we had left, but I don't think that technology exists right now.
Well, it exists, but we can't tap into their
ticket
sales.
Or
stuff,
can we?
So.
I'm stroking my chin right now. You can't see it. But or can we?
No.
I'll write some emails and see what.
I would rather not go to jail. Okay. Because
the,
I'm
the
sure.
Dungeon Master Roundtable
I'm sure
podcast
we can.
Supposed to happen right now, but they're in jail for hacking our system. So everybody should definitely buy tickets to that. They're going fast, and I have got to get on the phone with a couple rental companies and get things sorted out. But it's going to be one hell of a good time. So
a media event.
Yeah, rental companies have been pulled into the fray. So. Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that bodes very well for us.
I'm scared.
as Yoda would say, you should be.
Yes. I can honestly promise that a good time is going to be had by all, so including you guys.
I'm looking forward to it.
Some of the things that are going to happen there is going to be like my way of saying thanks for putting up with me over the last year. So. At the same time, making you put up with me even more. I work on layers. All right, guys, good night. I think we're going to start boring people pretty soon. Yeah. So.
What, you mean that didn't happen already?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
Night.